The CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast is now on Stitcher. Listen to us on your iPhone, Android phones, BlackBerry, and WebOS phones. Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
Are you ready, Steve?
Uh-huh.
Andy?
Yeah!
Bert? Well, all right, fellas. Well, let's go!
You're listening to CFRN, the Christian Financial Radio Network.
Today's broadcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/CFRN. Over 85,000 titles. Choose from mystery, romance, religion, science, technology, business, New York Times bestsellers, even children's books. You name it, Audible has it. With 85,000 titles to choose from, you're sure to find the perfect audiobook for yourself or to give as a gift, and it's absolutely free. Just point your browser to audibletrial.com/CFRN. That's audibletrial.com/CFRN. And become a part of the audiobook revolution by downloading your free audiobook today. audibletrial.com/CFRN.
Hey, trader, want to get rich quick? Well, good luck with that. If, on the other hand, you actually want to learn how to trade, the place to be is www.cfrn.net. Tune in Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern, for our daily devotional, and then spend the next 3 hours learning how it's done from professional traders who actually trade for a living. That's www.cfrn.net. Every trading day from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living.
Good afternoon, traders, and welcome back to the CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast. This is the daily broadcast of indeterminate length where we discuss all things E-Mini along with some really big ideas on the finer points of trading gold, bonds, crude, sugar, the euro, and even T-bills. Joining us today from our studios in Boston, Mr. Michael Bork. From our trading desk in Chicago, Mr. Burton Schlichter. And from our studios in Las Vegas, Nevada, Mr. David Williams. Now, to get things started, let's go to our host and founder in Studio A, overlooking South Mountain, America's largest city park. Here's Dwayne.
Good afternoon. Welcome back. Today is Monday, fourth day of February, 2013. Quick look at the numbers. The Dow is down 135 points. The S&P is down 15. The comp is down 39. Crude is down $1.39. And gold is up $5.40 a barrel. Michael is with us today. He's not been with us the last couple of radio broadcasts, so we're just going to go straight to him, let him get the recap taken care of. Michael, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Dwayne.
The screens and the microphone are all yours.
Okay, thanks. Thanks, I appreciate that. Let me grab them over here. Now, it's still converting the earlier recording from today when I did that stuff in the live trading room. So hopefully this isn't going to be a problem, but I think we should be okay. All right. Let me just start the recording, okay? We'll get going here. I don't want to be able to see this. Okay, there we go. All right, good afternoon, everyone. Today is February 4th, 2013. And we are going to go over all the trades that we took in the live trading room this morning, and actually we're going to go over what we did on Friday as well. Okay. Let's start right out with the results on Friday, okay? The results on Friday, we had plus 19 ticks in gold and minus 8 ticks on the crude oil. It took us 4 minutes to make our 2 points. It took us 4 minutes and two trades to make our 2 points Friday morning. Today, the results, we are plus 15 ticks in crude oil and plus 22 ticks in gold. It took us 5 minutes and one trade today to make our 2 points, or a 2 point equivalent. Okay, when I say make our 2 points, what I mean is make $100 a contract. You know, 2 points on the ES is $100 a contract. It's 2 point equivalent. Okay. All right. Those were the results for today. We took a Russell trade today that ended up being break even. We missed, you know, a ton of trades. We pointed out a bunch of trades. The trades that we took though ended up with we're plus $370 on the day, $370 per contract on the morning. And we really got those out of the way early, you know, in the first half an hour probably or so. All right. You can see right here the NQ is making a big run down. At the end of the live trading room this morning, I had circled... Where did I circle? I think I had circled over here is where I had circled, I think. Right in here. At the end of the live trading room. I think it was right in here or something. Maybe even been right in here. This one would have stopped you out. If it was this one, it kept going down. But there were many more opportunities in there. During the break, the markets really, really seemed to let loose once the European markets closed. All right. Those are the results. If you've not taken a free trial with us, go to www.cfrn.net/apply. Sign up for our free trial. In our free trial, you get 5 days in our live trading room. You get access to our indicator set. You'll be sent an email that says it says how to download the indicators, how to download the charting platform. Guys, if you take our free trial, if you sign up for our free trial, take the trial. Don't just sign up for it and come back to us a week later and say, oh, I signed up for it, but I couldn't make it in. You know, we allow the free trial 1 week every 6 months. If you sign up for the free trial, take the free trial. Take the whole thing. Download the indicators. Don't come back to us 2 weeks later and say, you know what, I took the free trial, but I didn't download the indicators. Can I do it again, and this time I'm going to download the indicators? You know, that's not fair to us, and, you know, it's not fair to you. Take the free trial if you're going to sign up for the free trial. If you're not going to do it, don't sign up for it. All right? Let's see. So, I was saying, to take our free trial, you go to cfrn.net/apply, sign up for the free trial, all right? We give you everything in the free trial, everything but access to the members area. So, you know, and access to the partners meetings. But everything else you get all the indicators, you get to sit in our live trading room, see us put the trades on, see us take the trades off, see us talk about the trades. All the pictures that we make, you get to see us make them, and you get to get copies of them, all that sort of stuff, right? It's definitely worth your time if you want to learn how to trade consistently, make money profitably, make money consistently, trade profitably, that's what I mean, in any of these markets that we trade, okay? So let's get on to the trades now, okay? Hang on, Alan, what setup do you look for to get back into a trade once you exit with a profit and the downtrend continues? You would look for let's find one. I'll show you one. Right over here. Okay. Here's a trade right here, and this is on the NQ. Okay, this is on the NQ. You have bearish divergence right here, and I have another picture that I made today. You know, because we have one set of indicators, and really, I say we have one trade setup. But if you look at, you know, when it fails to come all the way back to the BBC, and then you close down below the trend line, I suppose you could call that another trade setup. But it's really the same setup as this one right here, if it shows up. As this one right here, it just fails to come back and test the BBC. All right. What you look for is this. You look for the bearish cross, you know, price to pull away, price to attempt to pull back up. The cycle, you know, you got to have your divergence and all that still. Usually in this case here, usually by the time it closes below the trend line, the green line is going to be going in your favor, usually, but not always. Okay? And what you look for is the close down below the trend line. Now, this right here is exactly what happened over here. You know, three times in a row. Okay? The original trade was right here. It pulls back. I mean, you get your bearish cross. You tested the BBC with a down close, but you don't have any divergence on the down close. Right? There's no divergence there, so there's no short trade. Then price goes down, but it's got so much momentum that it doesn't pull back and hit the BBC. So right here, you draw on your little trend line. You have divergence down here. You wait for your close below the trend line, and you jump in. Now, if you took profit on that, and I'm saying this because there was a question. The question was, what setup do you look for to get back into a trade once you exit with a profit and the downtrend continues? And this is a perfect example of it. Now, the next one, it pulls down here, and look, you can draw another trend line right here. I didn't draw the trend line, but you can draw another trend line right there. All right, you have bearish divergence again. You get a down close below the trend line. You can jump in there again. You could have done it again right in here. Okay, right here, and again right here. All right, any one of those. One, two, three, four of them right there, right in a row. And then the fifth one turned around and went back up. So if you had an 8-tick stop on this and you took, say, 10, 15 ticks profit on that one, maybe 8 ticks profit on that one, maybe 8 ticks profit on that one, and maybe these ran right into each other. So maybe you took 8 ticks profit there, 10 there, you know, even 4 there. You know, you're looking at 20-something ticks profit there. Then you get this one that loses 8 ticks. So you're up 16 ticks profit between these trades right here, and that's being conservative. And then it continues. You know, there's another one there, changes directions, then it continues again. Now, those weren't any of the trades that we took in the live trading room this morning. This morning, I've decided that, you know, since with all the stuff that I have going on, you know, with the family stuff that I have going on right now, I wanted to get the 2 points out of the way as quickly as possible this morning, and, you know, and for everybody that's in here who's a partner or who's on the free trial, I may try to get into the live trading room early tomorrow in the pre-market. We don't have any news events. We didn't have any today. And I don't know about tomorrow. I don't think we have any significant ones tomorrow either. So, you know, the majority of the action is likely to be in the first hour or so. This was the second picture that I made today. Now, there's two different ways that the trend lines come into play. This and this. This was the trade that I took, the first trade that I took in the live trading room this morning, right after the open. Price came down, tested the BBC, and when it tested the BBC, the cycle was red, so you need a close above the trend line. Once we got the close above the trend line, I entered, and I took profit at plus 10 ticks right there. That was the equivalent of 2 points, okay? Alan, I'll send it off to you. Just send me an email, okay? If you want it, just send me an email saying screenshot, please, and I'll send it off to you. That was the first trade that I took. That got me the 2 points. I could have stopped right there for the morning. If 2 points was my daily goal and I was just, you know, your average trader or your normal trader guy who had a 2-point target, I could have stopped right there after 5 minutes. Because I'm always in there teaching and training, we kept going. And we took a trade here that didn't go anywhere. We got break even on that one. And we took another trade right here that dropped down 5 ticks we took profit on. So that was all my trading on the crude oil this morning. We identified more trades as they happened, like this one right here, over here. This one right here I said I wasn't going to take because the black line got too close to the green. Over here was a shorting opportunity. Over here was a shorting opportunity that would have stopped you out. It stopped you out just about to the tick, then it came back a little bit, went back and forth a little. But there was more opportunity right here. All right. And you would have needed the down close over here. It would have been this down close right here to get short. All right. And that was the morning on crude oil. Okay. Let's see. I have I'm going to go to the Russell next. Okay. Now, I made a recording this morning. I think it just finished converting. I made a recording this morning during a live trading room. And it... I'm sorry. In the recording, I went over a bunch of the stuff about drawing trend lines and all that with in a live market. I was drawing the trend lines in a live market, and I was explaining the trend lines as I drew them. So I think there was a lot of good information in there because some things happened in that time that we get questions about a lot. You know, like the black line and how to use the black line and things like that. You know, the black step line right in there. Now, this is gold. It looks like I only marked up one of my trades on gold here. Yeah, it looks like... Oh, this isn't gold. This is the Russell. Okay. Whew. Good. All right. I only took one trade on the Russell. When we tested the BBC here and gave an up close, I went long. I think I went long at 904 even. And once it got up here above the BBC, I moved my stop to break even, and it came back and took me out of break even. Then it moved up 8 ticks. Okay. It did go all the way up to the zone. Then it came all the way back to the other zone. Now, these little yellow arrows here... Now, when I blow things up, the arrows stay in place, so the arrows are a little out of sync right there. But on the way down here, there were a couple of spots where you could have shorted. All right, I wasn't following it that close because I was trading other stuff. But that was the Russell. It's all the same stuff. Okay, I'm going to go over to gold now. And here we are on the gold. Here we are on the gold. All right. The first opportunity was right in here. There was a bullish divergence. It was right at the open. There was bullish divergence with the close above the trend line. Could have gotten long on that one. I didn't. I waited. It pulled back down here and gave an up close right here. I jumped in on that one. And I don't remember. I think I took 9 ticks profit on that one. And then there was another opportunity right over here. And this one was the standard... off the BBC one, okay? All right, you have your bullish cross, your pullback, test to the BBC with an up close with your space, steps 1, 2, and 3, and step 4 is the bullish reversions. Okay? That's what that was. Right in there. And I got in on the up close right here, and I took however many ticks profit it was in there. I think I ended up with 22 ticks, so I think it was 13 ticks profit I took on that one. Let's see, the next one was right in here. All right, I didn't take any more trades, but these are more trades that set up, okay, as it was going along. There was an opportunity to get long in here, an opportunity to get long in here. And this is during the break now, but there was another opportunity, well, right in there. But by the time you got the up close, the green line was pretty much into the cycle. And that was pretty much it. That was pretty much it on the gold. Okay. So we ended plus 22 ticks on gold. All right. Yes, it means the actual close of the bar, the actual left close of the bar. Gary, I would have to refer you to a psychiatrist for that. I don't know the rest of the statement. Why? Let's see. I'm sure you're probably typing in the rest of the statement right now. But okay, I'll wait for that to come in before I make any more little jokes. Let's see. I'm a little punchy, can you tell? Is there a way to calculate the close of the bar before the bar closes? Good question. Yes, there is. I'll go into that in a minute. I actually did go into that in that recording that I made this morning, I think. I think I showed that a little bit this morning. Crude oil just took a dive. I don't know why. When the blue-red line crosses... I don't have anything for that. You're talking about the cycle? When it crosses up, go long. When it crosses down, go short. Okay. There's... we've covered stuff like that in the past, but what I would say is on larger time frames, you really want it to have more room. You know, when it gets down here, usually on the larger time frames, when it gets down below the 50% mark, usually, you know, the move is pretty near done. And when it gets above it, you know, it's topping out and bottoming out. In the faster time frames, it may be a little more significant, but I think you're going to get whipped around too much. It's tough to put a bracket around that. Okay. Sorry about my earlier joke. all right, now on the NQ, using the same exact stuff. All right, the NQ had big movement this morning in the pre-market. All right, it really tanked in there in the pre-market. And then once it opened up, there were a couple of quick opportunities in here for a little bit. And then it turned around, and you would have been looking in here, bearish divergence. The black line got up above the green. This is a good example of when not to trade. The green line is in between the black and the MA1. All right. There was no opportunity there on the way down. Nothing here on the way up. Nothing here on the way down. See, the NQ was really messy until it got over here and it really started to trend. Then there was some good opportunity. There was probably, you know, right in here, there was a little bit of opportunity on the short side. Okay. Okay, right in there. Okay. It should have gone down from there. Okay. All right. Let's see. And Kyle, Dwayne, do you see that question from Kyle in there? I don't know what the number is off the top of my head. All right. anyway. Let's see here, guys. We have right here, we have a close down below this trend line. This is the trend line that you would have drawn, okay? With a close down below the trend line right there, could have been something to short on. I probably wouldn't have done it anyway because the black line is so close to the green right there. Once it got over here, though, this is what I talked to you about a minute ago when I opened up with the recap right in here. A down close there, a down close there, a down close there. All those opportunities in there, okay? That's pretty much the NQ on the morning. There was some movement on the soybeans this morning, not a whole lot. All right, right here at the open of the soybean market, there was this up close right here, and this up close right here. This one went up, this one didn't, and this one went about a point, not a point, about three ticks, which would be 3/4 of a point, equivalent on the ES. It turned around and it came down. Over here, you would have been looking at this, the same stuff, guys. Now, this is soybeans, but you're looking at it on the same time frame. You're looking at the same exact setups, okay? That down close right there is what you would have been looking for. And now it's testing the BBC and giving a down close, but you would need a down close below this trend line. Okay. That is that. All right. Let's jump over here. The 6J, we didn't have any trades this morning on the 6J. I want to say we looked at it a little bit, but not too much. Really, I didn't look at it much at all. The natural gas was something to be watching this morning. We did watch natural gas just a little bit, but these were the opportunities in it this morning. In the right after the open, those were the opportunities. Okay, and then once it got up here, I said, I think it's a little long in the tooth, and I would wait for a pullback down to the BBC. It got down to the BBC, but it had bearish divergence down here at that time, so you weren't interested in trading in there. Okay, that's it. All right, the ES. I'm sure a lot of you guys are interested in the ES and what it may or may not have had to offer this morning. There was nothing in here this morning, okay? We really didn't have anything going on in here. once it got down into the weekly trading zone, there was one opportunity right here at about 11 o'clock, but it was inside the weekly trading zone, so I wasn't interested in doing that. You see, we had the bearish divergence with the test of the BBC and a down close. There was another one over here, a test of the BBC with a down close, but you need to close below the trend line because even though you have some divergence, the cycle portion is blue, so you would have needed this close right here. And I don't trade the ES if I don't have 2 points between my entry and a weekly trading zone. Okay. So that is that. All right, I think that covers pretty much all the markets, guys. And I think I answered all the questions, too. So if anybody has any questions, you can email us at support@cfrn.net. That's support@cfrn.net. Or you can call us you can call Bert and Leslie at 866-928-3310. Okay, it's 866-928-3310. All right. With that, I'm going to wrap up the recording for the morning. Again, we were plus 15 on crude, plus 22 on gold. On Friday, we were minus 8 on crude and plus 19 on gold, I believe. Let me just check that again. I didn't speak about calculating a close. Hold on a sec. Let me just check Friday's to make sure. Yeah, Friday's is right. Calculating a close. Calculating a close. Oh, that's because I did it in the video. But I'll show you anyway. The kind of bars that we use here, guys, they're range bars. Every bar is 4 ticks in height. So if we look at this bar over here, we'll say right now on the natural gas. This bar, if we assume this is going to keep going down from right here, okay, this bar has a high of 33.48. That means it's going to have a low. If it's going to keep going down, it's going to have a low of 33.44. All right? 33.44 is the low of that bar. If this high of the bar is maintained. Okay. If it goes up one more tick, then you'll know how high and low that bar is going to be. Because you could still, like right now, you see the bar hasn't closed yet. And you know it's got a high of 33.48 and a low 33.44. Then it ticked down below, and it was a close down below 30. It was a close at 33.44. Did you see how I did that? I was able to calculate where the close of the bar was going to be. The current bar has a low of 33.43. So if this low is maintained, then the high is going to be 33.47. Okay? If the low is not maintained, it's got a high of 33.46. It'll have a low of 33.42. And there's the 33.42. Okay? That's it. That's how you calculate when the bars, or where the bars are going to close. Or sort of get an idea. All right. So basically, if you can handle adding and subtracting up to 4, then you can do this. All right, with that, I am going to wrap up the recording right here. Okay. If anybody has any questions, you can email us at support@cfrn.net. If you haven't taken the trial yet, go to cfrn.net/apply. And that's it. Okay, recording is wrapped up.
Okay, thanks very much, Michael. And Carl, I sent you those instructions that you needed for dialing in, so you won't get bumped off.
Kyle said he got in
by your internet connection. Okay, so you covered the trades from. Did you cover Thursdays as well?
No, I didn't actually. I covered the results from Friday. I was in on Thursday, right? I did Thursday, or did I not do Thursday?
No, you were here Thursday. You just weren't here for the radio show Thursday.
Oh no, I'll have to do that tomorrow.
It's not a big deal. I was just curious.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what the results were for Thursday. Thursday's results were plus 19 in what is that? Crude oil plus 7 in gold, and it took us 8 minutes to get our 2 points, and we did it in 2 trades on Thursday. Okay, so in the past 3 days, it took us a total of 17 minutes to get 2 points combined on all 3 days. So we ended up with 6 points in 17 minutes, if you combine it all.
Okay, and that the point I want to make in regards to that, guys, is that this is not a race, okay? We're not trying to run some race every day to see how fast we can get it. And the last thing in the world we want you to do is to start running some kind of race with yourself and getting yourself into a jam because, well, they did it in so many minutes, and so I should be able to do it too. Listen, if you have to sit there all day long until your trade setup shows up and you take your trade, and if you put in an 8-hour day, okay, and you net your 2 points at the end of the day, all right, then that's a great day. You did a great day's work. The reason we've started to capture the amount of time each day is it's for a couple reasons. Number one, we trade the entire 2 hours. And I talked about this a little bit on Friday, but because of the email I sent you guys over the weekend, I want to make sure that you understand this concept. We've talked about the value of 2 points a day for a number of years. We're not the only people in the world who recognize the value of that concept. However, most places that you see or hear it talked about, it remains just that. It's a concept. It's a theory. It's like, a really good idea if you could do that. So what we're doing is we're simply tying some realistic metrics to it. Rather than saying it would be nice if you could, we want to be able to say we actually did. Okay, on what day? Okay, here's the day. How long did it take? This is how long it took. That's not to encourage you to be in a hurry, to put undue pressure on yourself, none of that. It's so that you can look over here and go, okay, I see that it's more than just a theory. It's more than just a good idea. It's more than just a concept. It actually can be done. Now, Michael's been trading for a number of years. This particular trade setup that we're using right now, this is the culmination of a number of things coming together over a number of years. For those of you that got that email this weekend, I talked a little bit about the history that Michael and I have together, the number of years, what we've gone through, the ups and downs, the roller coaster, both emotional, financial. It's all, you know, it took all of that to get us to where we are today. So, now does our hard work and agony help you to get to the finish line a little quicker than you might normally? Well, good Lord, I hope so. But you can't you can't jump over the hard work yourself, okay? You still have to learn how to trade. You've got to learn how to use the indicators. You've got to learn how to read the chart. You've got to learn how to, you know, watch the setup come together and then execute and then exit. You then have to learn how to get up and walk away if your goal is the 2 points a day. Or maybe you don't have to get up and walk away, but you have to stop trading. Because, see, a lot of days, because we're committed to trading for the full 2 hours, because we have partners in there, and that's part of the deal of becoming a partner, is that we train for 2 hours live every day, Monday through Friday. And so we get those 2 points, we continue to trade, and the point we end up making some days is that if you keep at it, you can give those 2 points back. Now, what if you and there's many of you out there listening to me, you know exactly what I'm talking about. You've done it. You got up. You showered. You had new shower gel. You were happy. You were humming. You were singing. You were whistling. You had quiet time, prayer time. Maybe you jogged, got on the treadmill. I don't know. Whatever it is you do to get ready for your day. Man, you hit that platform, and within 5 minutes, boom, you were done. You had your 2 points. All the stars were aligned, the world was perfect, and you had no peace. Because you were chomping at the bit, man, you're ready to go. And so, even though everything had played out according to the script, Now you're going to deviate from that. And then you're calling me or calling Michael or sending us an email, you know, towards the close, and it goes something like, man, I don't understand. I had 2 points this morning in the first 10 minutes of trading, and now here I've worked all day long, and I'm down 6. How's that possible? Well, it's possible because you didn't stop after you got the 2. Now, the other side of this whole argument about getting the 2 is it may be said or thought that, well, you can't really get 2 every day. Okay? Now, I want you to think about this. You will hear that, well, you know, that's all kind of well and fine, but, you know, if it were true that you could actually get 2 points every day, then the whole thing might make sense. But, yeah, that's, you know, meh. Okay, so that's another reason that we've started to record all the metrics. You know, the days in a row, the amount of time, not to brag, not to put ourselves up on a pedestal, not to boast, not to create some illusion or false goal in your eyes, but to make it all factual. Okay. Now, how many days has it been since we didn't get 2 points in the first 2 hours, Michael?
I don't know. It's been a long time. December 10th was our last down day in the first 2 hours, and we were down $30 a contract on December 10th.
We were down at the end of the 2 hours, but if I'm not mistaken, early on in the session, we did have our 2 points.
We were way up. I think we were up over $300 on that morning.
And so, see, that's my point, guys. I mean, I understand that, you know, some people will say, because there's no absolutes in trading, and I can't, even though we have this string of days where we got the 2 points in front of a live audience, bunch of people watching, even though we did that, I still can't guarantee you that we're going to do it tomorrow. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. So, you know, now, do we have an incredible amount of confidence that we'll be able to? We do. And that confidence comes simply from the fact that we've done it now day after day after day for quite a long period of time. But we have to make sure that that confidence doesn't turn into cocky, okay? There's a whole world of difference. A man can be confident and humble, or he can be confident and a jerk, all right? And that jerk thing will come back to haunt you so quick. You don't ever want to go there. I mean, you might get away with it for a little while, but eventually it'll catch up to you. So you just don't even want to go there. You want to be humble. You want to have... See, I talked Friday a lot about the goals, okay? And I, in that email that I sent you guys over the weekend, anybody that didn't get that email, if you want it, you can email support at cfrn.net. I'll be happy to send you the email. We're going to do something a little special on Friday, and if you want to be a part of that, just send an email to support at cfrn.net and tell me you want to be included in the little Friday get-together. But when it comes to goals, you know, they have to be clearly definable, okay? Having a goal of, well, you know, my goal is I just want to make some pretty good money, you know, trading futures so that I can quit my job and I can retire at some point, or I can quit my day job, okay? That's not a valid goal. I mean, I understand it, you know, it is a goal, but it's not clearly defined. Michael, can you think of a better way to say clearly defined than clearly defined?
No.
Okay. All right. So see, this is a four-point thing. A goal has to be clearly defined. I want to make a lot of money trading futures. That's very generic. That's not clearly defined. I mean, it's clearly defined in that you want to make a lot of money and that you want to do it with futures. But by clearly defined, I have a daily goal of 2 points a day. Okay. That's clearly defined. All right. Next, you have to ask yourself, is my goal realistic? I had an email from someone a couple weeks ago, I think now, and they were trying to be very earnest and honest and upfront, and they were running stuff by me, and their goal was to get 20 points a day in the S&P. Okay? Now, that's a clearly defined goal, but does it meet the next step in our little criteria checklist here? Realistic. Is that realistic, Michael?
No, unless you're trading 20 contracts, then, you know, it's, because you would,
well,
you'd
you
only
know,
need one
now,
point.
If you do the math that way, okay, if you're trading 20 contracts and you just get 1 point a day, nah, that is 20 points, but I think you guys know that we're always referring to per contract.
Right.
Okay, every
right.
time we put these, every time we show you one of these metrics and record it, it's per contract. So although this person was attempting to create a good, you know, list of goals for themselves, and they were trying to adhere to the formula, they got it clearly defined. I want to make 20 points a day on the ES. Okay, that's clearly defined, but then we go to the next step. Is that realistic? Well, based on the fact that the average true range on a daily chart right now of the ES is like somewhere around 11 points, I think the last time I checked. The highest I recall it being in quite a few months is 18. So actually that 20 is not realistic. You got to bring that back down to something that's realistic. After realistic, is it attainable? Okay, now you'd go, well, wait a minute, realistic and attainable, isn't that the same thing? No. Realistic is, can it be done? Yes or no. Attainable is, can you do it? Yes or no. Because different people with different skill sets have different abilities. Okay. Now, for Michael, okay, 2 points a day, we've shown that that's realistic, okay, because of the long string of days. Now, but for you, the individual trader, is it attainable? Well, if you're just getting started, it very well may not be yet, because you haven't exactly got the setup nailed. You're still working on, you know, getting a feel for the indicators. You know, you got some learning to do. You got to roll up your sleeves and do some hard work. The fourth metric on this criteria, or the fourth thing on this list of criteria for goals, is it has to be measurable. So one more time, clearly defined, then realistic, then attainable, and then measurable. In other words, can you look back at the end of the day and go, I achieved my goal? During the day, can you say, oh, okay, I just hit my goal for the day? Doesn't mean you got to go golfing or skiing or hunting or fishing or boating or anything else. You can sit there and you can work on new trade setups. You can do market research. You can do any number of things. You can simply watch the market. You can experiment with some different things using the trade simulator. But that's when you come out of your live account, if you've met your goal. So clearly defined, realistic, attainable, and measurable. What we do in the live trading room every morning is all four of those things. And we've been adhering to that for some time now. We're going to continue to adhere to that going forward, because that gives you, the trader, something that you can hang your hat on. Now, there's no guarantees in the world of trading, no absolutes. No one can guarantee you success in the markets, and anyone that does, you should run from that person, because they truly don't have your best interest at heart. Okay? Michael has worked really hard to break this thing down to the lowest common denominator by using the same time frame and the same indicators and the same methodology across multiple markets. ES, gold, crude, Russell, NASDAQ, beans, yen. What else, Michael? Is there anything else we're trading in there in the mornings?
You got beans, yen, natural gas, gold, crude, the euro occasionally. We don't trade that often anymore, but the YM, we don't trade that all that often right now. But we did trade that regularly for a long time. So you did beans. Yeah, that's about it. That's enough. that.
Don, I see your comment there. Clearly defined is the same as measurable or equals measurable. Actually, not really, because measurable means that at some point during the day you're able to go back and measure that. You need to be able to confirm that you did what you clearly defined earlier. Okay, so that's what I mean by measurable. But I think, guys, in all areas of your life, if you'll jot those four things down, because whether you're setting goals for, you know, some other business you may have, or something to do with your family, or you're helping your children set goals for their school work, whatever, this is kind of a nice little template for just every kind of goal you might have in your life. Clearly defined, realistic, attainable, measurable. Now, my question becomes then, if you want to learn to trade E-mini futures, and if you've already gone down the path and you're on the journey, where are you? Where are you on that journey? Okay? Are you successful yet? And your answer might be kinda, or I think so, or I'm not sure. Okay? Then go to that little list and clearly define what success means to you. Make sure that what you've clearly defined is realistic. Then assess your own skill set to figure out if it's attainable. And then get busy measuring that so that you know when you get there, when you've arrived, when you've achieved. Okay? So, again, we're doing everything we can to make this available and accessible to every person that wants to succeed in the world of E-mini futures trading. Again, I wish we could guarantee you success. We can't do that. All we can do is put our years of experience at your disposal, the tools, but you have to bring a lot to the table. You have to bring a good work ethic. You have to bring discipline. You got to show up every day. You know, you have to do a lot of work, okay? This isn't just business in a box, just, you know, open the can and there it is. That's just the beginning, okay? But when you become a partner, you have the benefit of not only Michael's experience and what experience I have, you have the experience of Bert and Leslie as well, who are not only brokers, but they trade themselves. They understand our methodology. When you call in with a question, they know where you're coming from, not just as the broker, but even as a trader, because they understand how the setups come. Bert, like a champ, came into the live trading room the other morning and was able to point out the trades, far better than I could, because I've been in the background shuffling paperwork and doing things on the website. Michael's taking the forefront, putting on and taking off the trades, but obviously Bert had been paying attention. And many of the partners, that was really exciting when partners started to come to the forefront and go, hey man, over here, over here, over here. Draw the trend line. Okay, boom, there's the entry. Wow. That was really encouraging. So to not only Bert, but to all of the partners who showed up and showed off on Friday, and I mean that in a good way, you're the bomb. Yeah. All right. Okay, Michael, I guess you probably need to go, and I probably need to go to Vegas, right?
David.
All right. All right, guys, we're going to pause for a very brief, and again, if you didn't get that email over the weekend and you want to hang out with us on Friday, then just send me an email, support@cfrn.net. I'll send you the email. If you want to be a part of it, you can. If you don't, that's okay. And Thursday night's partners meeting. And I'm almost caught up on the podcast. I think I still have to get Fridays uploaded. And the Coach's Corner, I've got to get that uploaded. And I'll try to get those done this afternoon. Okay. Every Friday at 3 Eastern, Robin Dane, Coach's Corner. Come hang out with us on Fridays. We have a great time. Friday was a good day. We had some good questions. We enjoyed it. So let's pause right now for a quick station identification. We'll be right back with David Williams from PageTrader.com and Miss Robin Dane, the trading coach. Engineer?
Yes.
You're listening to CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living. To learn more about who we are, what we do, and how we do it, call toll-free 1-866-928-3310, and we'll send you out a no-obligation information kit absolutely free. 866-928-3310.
Hey, David, good morning. Welcome to the show. And Robin, good
morning.
Thank you
very much.
You as well.
And it's a great day in Las Vegas. Super Bowl Sunday, testosterone levels were at 99%.
I just want to say publicly that I did, believe it or not, I did predict a Ravens win.
I did too.
Not because I know anything about football, but only because I was doing the contrarian viewpoint, which was that I think most people felt that the others were going to win, and I was just lucky. I'm better with the markets, but that was just luck.
I you won't believe this, but I literally went to one of the casinos and I got the list of the possible things that you could bet, and it was just like 5 pages long, both sides.
Yeah. You can place some of the strangest bets.
Unbelievable.
You can bet that the sweet and sour chicken being served on noon will less greasy
if
certain team wins or whatever. There's so many bets you can place on this.
It was amazing, and you won't believe this. I called a friend of mine in California who I love dearly, and he's a real football fanatic. I also am not, don't follow these teams and stuff. I enjoy football. I like to watch the game, but I'm not a diehard football fan, sitting there every week. But I do enjoy. I found it interesting that the coaches were brothers, and that to me is an underlying thing. There were just a lot of underlying dynamics of this game that made me really excited to watch it. So I called my friend California and I gave him, so I said, look, I want to place a small bet. I was like $10 or something on something. So we went through and I picked for the first touchdown and I actually won $80. I picked the guy for the first touchdown at 8-1 on $10. I was like, yeah.
Nice.
And I knew nothing. I mean, I just knew nothing. And so it was quite extraordinary. And I really do believe that blackout that occurred really threw the Ravens off. They were on such a great momentum. I think they would have had a slam dunk, unbelievable win had that blackout not occurred. And that just shows you how the psychology can really affect the game, because they lost their momentum and the other guys got a real good talking to, I'm sure, because they were down so much after the first half. They got a huge talking to, got all pumped up, came back raring to go, and that really did make the difference in that game, that blackout. And so, psychology hits everything. Psychology will hit an athlete, a trader, your personal life, everything. Psychology and what's between your ears can affect anything.
No doubt.
Yep.
No doubt.
But it was a great game. And it always gets down to the last 5 minutes. You could probably go through the whole thing and just see the last 5 minutes and enjoy it.
So did anybody figure out why the lights went off? What caused that?
They said a cable outside the stadium that wasn't in their control, went out. And those kind of lights, those are the kinds of ones that we have on the tennis court that takes like 15, 20 minutes for them to crank up. They're special kind of, I forget what kind of lights they call them. But they have to crank up, you can't flip the switch and they turn on. They've got to be pumped or something. We have to do it on the tennis courts when we play at night. We have to do it like 15 minutes ahead of time before they go out, or else we have to wait 20 minutes in the dark. So, Yeah, it was just a shame. And watching that other coach, you know, he was really, really pretty upset when he was talking to the guy, I guess, that was in charge of the lights. He was really ripping him. But, it was a very interesting game. The passes, that one touchdown, full field touchdown by the Ravens was absolutely beautiful in the first half. Just absolutely incredible. Absolutely. And the passing, and, you know, for the head guy for Franco? Who's the passer for the Ravens. He was fabulous. Absolutely fabulous. What an arm and what precision. Unbelievable. Great game. Okay, I'm done. You guys better talk about the markets.
Well, before we talk about the markets, I did want to ask, because I didn't actually see it, were there any remarkable commercials?
Oh, yes. There were two that I loved. I loved the M&M commercial. It was fabulous. Absolutely fabulous. I loved also the Budweiser one where they show the cult because they the baby. They very rarely show the babies of the Clydesdales, and it was so touching. I mean, it made you cry. Well, it made me cry. You know, women, how women are, but it made me cry to see, you know, they show this little theme of the baby being born and this one trainer, because they are assigned one trainer in the Budweiser plant.
Robin, can you turn your mic down just a tad?
Oh, I'm high?
Just,
too high?
Just okay, a little hot, yeah.
Sorry. Is that better?
Yeah, I mean, you're crystal clear.
Okay. Is that better? Testing,
yeah.
testing.
Yeah, that's better. That's better.
Okay. They show the Clydesdale being born. Then they show the trainer that gets assigned to them and him watching them. And then the horse makes the team. And they are very, very particular about, does the horse make the team? They have to be a certain size, a certain length. I mean, this is all this criteria. And he now has to let him go because he's been picked for the team. And he says goodbye, and it's very sad. And then he goes to an event, and he sees them, and he sees the Clydesdale team come out, and there's this horse in the front of the team, and I'm going to start to cry now. And he sees them, and he's on the sideline, and he's looking at them, and, you know, he's like really proud, and he gets in his car, and all of a sudden the Clydesdale comes running down the street and comes up to him, and here I am crying already, and he kisses them. And it was just fabulous.
Oh.
I'm so silly. Ignore me. I'm so silly. I'm very sentimental today about that commercial. It was fabulous. And they had the SodaStream commercial on there as well. It was different. I sent Dwayne a copy of the original one that didn't get aired. And the SodaStream commercial was on there. It was good. It wasn't – I don't think it was fabulous, but it got the point across.
Mm-hmm. Well, those were my
picks. Oh, and I think there was the one with the goat and the Doritos. That was good too. Three of them.
Well, it had to be pretty good commercials. I've never heard somebody recant a commercial in tears.
I know.
That had to be a pretty good commercial.
It was fabulous. You should really see. I'm sure it's on YouTube somewhere, the Budweiser one. But it's, you know, it really is a story of their life in a very short snippet. And, you know, living near the Budweiser plant and watching those horses run in the snow in the wintertime is like nothing you've ever seen. They're just fabulous animals, just incredible animals. And, you know, seeing what they go through. To make the team. It's pretty neat.
Well, good. Dwayne, did you get a chance to watch that?
I watched a little bit of it. I turned it on right about halftime. I saw some of the halftime show with Beyonce. And
it's fabulous.
Then I saw that incredible history-making kickoff return. That's the longest kickoff return in Super Bowl history. And then the lights went out. I think that's probably another Super Bowl first.
Mm-hmm.
And I could just see the head. And then it looked like, then San Francisco made this incredible comeback rally.
Right.
I mean, I could just see the headlines writing themselves how, you know, their momentum was stolen by the lights going out and some San Francisco fan was responsible for you know, blah, blah. But, you know, they managed to pull it out. But it turned what looked like was going to be a runaway game into, you know, a very interesting and a very engaging. And I'm not a sports guy, but just as I was working at my desk, I had a TV on with the game. And even I understood that it became a bit exciting. So.
Well, good. Well, I'll tell you, there's quite a bit we can talk about in the markets today, or several things anyway, if you want to get right into it. I don't know if there's any other important news today that's affecting the markets or are potentially going to affect markets coming up this week. I know we do have some reports and some things coming out. I don't have the list in front of me. But if you'd like, Dwayne, we can jump right into it here and take a look around.
Okay, I'm ready.
Yeah. Let's take a look at this. First thing, the most important thing today is we do have the S&P in a sell-off today. Nothing major. This is pretty routine, but it's a relatively important event because we're starting the week on a down note. Now, I don't read too much into that, but, you know, all the periods of time that people accept as normal, as an example, a day, a week, or a month, those periods of time just inherently become their own kind of cycle because everyone is agreed on it. You can also look at many other types of ways of measuring theoretical cycles, but I think it's more important to know what everyone has agreed upon because that already by its own nature is a cycle. So we all agree that the S&P opens at 8:30 in the morning, Chicago time, and closes at 2:15, Chicago time. And that creates its own cycle, so to speak. And so the reason I'm bringing that up is that the week has begun. We all agree on a week, and the week has begun on a down note. So it'll be interesting to see how the market handles critical price levels. As you know, our forecast just continues to be what it has been for quite some time, all the way since back in August of last year, which is that we're looking for higher prices, continued usual declines and advances up to and including 1515 and or higher in the S&P. So last week we did on Friday get up to 1510.50. We've come within about 4.5 points of 1515, but that does not resolve the deal. I think under normal conditions, we can say that the market is strong and that they should be able to touch that target. Is it possible that that's all they're able to do? You know, yes, it is possible, but in the vast majority of cases, the market would actually touch and complete these targets. So, therefore, we think the pullbacks that we're seeing here do constitute buying territory at the various important price levels. Today, we have 94.93. We've made a low today of 92, and they're starting to very quietly, but they're starting to firm up here. So I think that's important. And you can continue to watch this. For those of you who have reflected wave, you know what's going on with that, and you can put a trade together based upon that or any other method that you want to use here for intraday day trading purposes here. So that's basically our longer term and just really shorter term outlook here is that wherever this decline takes us to, we think it's still going to be buying territory for completion of the upside. So that's our outlook on the S&P. We'll talk more about it, of course, during the week as the market reaches these critical levels on the downside. And they've already reached one today, so this has been a pretty easy read so far. And the market volatility is actually decently, you know, a little bit improved. It's not big. It's not even really normal. But it's definitely a little improved with the gap open and, you know, we're down 12 points or so. That's a beginning of decent volatility here. And at these turning points, the volatility will often get bigger. I'm talking about much larger time frame turning points where you'll see a very big back and forth between the longs and the shorts, and then finally the new direction takes over and the market very quickly runs to the next important price levels and beyond quite often. So, and Beyonce quite often. So that's basically the S&P, and this ties in, real quick if I can do this, this ties in with our forecast for the 30-year U.S. Treasury bond market. This is a pair of markets that people commonly look at and they say, well, if the bonds go up, the S&P goes down. If the S&P goes down, the bonds go up. And that is often the case with the bonds and the S&P, and certainly is the case somewhat today because the bonds are up today. And we had forecast last month that the month of February 2013 would mark an important bottom in the bonds. So we're watching that form. I can tell you there's more I can say about the bonds. I won't go into it right now, but the the main thing is that there's a monthly bottom for February. And if you're thinking of financing or refinancing or doing something with financing, I don't know exactly where the interest rates are today, but I think the idea is that the interest rates will be lower in a month or so from now than they are now, because the market will bottom. You know, we're early in the month of February, but this might work to your favor, and it won't make a whole lot of difference, because the last time I looked, I think 30-year loans were still at 3.7 or 3.8 with decent credit and so on. But they will likely improve somewhat from that, depending on whether you're an investor or a homeowner, because the interest rates are different, of course. You know, if you're a homeowner and going to live in the house, the bank has less risk on that loan than they do if you're an investor, say, renting the house to someone else. They will charge the investor a higher interest rate if he's looking to finance. So, and if you were an investor and you went to the bank and said, I'm actually going to be living in the house, and then you didn't live in the house, believe it or not, that's a federal crime. You can't lie to the bank in order to get preferential loan treatment and that sort of thing. So in case any of you are in that position, be very careful with that type of scenario. And what the bank normally does, if you're an investor, and we'll get to the markets, but I'm just pointing this out, might be of interest to some people. If you're an investor, a person who's not going to live in a piece of property and you are going to rent it to somebody else, the bank will charge you a slightly higher interest rate, and they'll charge you more down payment. They want you to have more, you know, skin in the game because you're an investor and they want you to take care of the property. If they're financing it, they want to make sure that you get as close to possible as what a homeowner would have. A homeowner lives there. He's going to take very good care of the house, hopefully, and he's going to be living there every day. He's going to be maintaining it and so on. So when you're an investor, they do charge a little bit more, and they definitely charge more for the down payment on that. But all of this has to do with this monthly bottom in February. Multi-month advance would come off of that. That would keep interest rates low, and we would still have, that would tell me that we're still going to be having low interest rates probably into at least, say, September of this year. The interest rates were August or September. I mean, I'm just roughly saying that there's probably going to be most of 2013 will probably have low interest rates based on this, what we're seeing here, because there's a number of factors coming into what I'm saying. But that gives you the time to know that, because I've been saying for a long time, hey, you know, if you've got something going, take advantage of this, the blue moon, and nothing's 100%. This is a high probability scenario, we believe, that once the February bottom is confirmed and in, that interest rates will continue to stay low into August or September of this year, which is a good thing to know, because maybe you need some time to take advantage of this and so on. So looking forward to that. So the bond market is up today, and the S&P is down, and there's that relationship that we've talked about and we've seen so many times. So those are the two corollary markets that that and the euro and the dollar, which I think the euro and the dollar are even closer in their connection. Anything you want to add to any of that, Duane?
As far as the interest rates or the S&P data?
Or anything you want to throw in there?
Well, the only thing is on the S&P, we bounced off of our weekly trading zone here at 1491.92, and that's important, really, only in that today's only Monday, and we only have one weekly trading zone below us from this point. So, I mean, that's not that unusual or unheard of. It happens before, but typically it's over the course of the week that we get towards the highs or the lows. So the fact that we're down here this low, this early in the week, I think that this might be a pretty good spot for a bounce in the S&P. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. No, they're going to firm up. Any retest today, later today, if they were to retest today's lows, that would be an interesting point, especially if it happens after lunch, which is when I would expect it. If it were going to happen, that's when I would expect it to happen. But I'm only saying if it does. I'm not forecasting that it will. I'm just saying that if it does do that, I would then potentially be looking at that retest as very important for possibly putting a position on, a second position on or whatever. By then, it's likely we'll have been in something. So we'll see. It's an interesting thing. The volatility has picked up a little bit. The ranges will be a little bit bigger. And so there might be some good trading in the S&P this week. And we do have, Duane, I just wanted to double check. We do have a holiday coming up next week. I'm not even sure what it is, but it's looks to me like it's a 4-day. Is it President's Day or something?
Wow, a lot of holidays. I said we are a holiday-rich nation.
We are.
Actually, we're not compared to some, you know, I mean, places like Australia and in the UK. They have, they kind of laugh at Americans because we work 40, 60, 80-hour weeks. But, yeah, it just seems like we're, I mean, we had Thanksgiving, then we had Christmas, then we had Martin Luther King Day, and then we, didn't we have some other?
We had something else, and I think we have President's Day. We have a couple other four-day weekends coming up. I think it's the weekend after this, and I'm not sure what the holiday is. But
then we have clear sailing all the way up to Memorial Day or Labor Day.
There you are. Labor Day, Memorial Day.
Yeah, you know. President's Day is February 18th, according to Don. Thank you, Don.
That is President's Day. Thank you. Okay. So that's the next one. That's after this weekend. So we'll see how the markets are playing into that. That's a kind of a 3-day, maybe even a 4-day weekend. I don't have the calendar in front of me, but we'll talk about that as we get closer to it.
What do the markets do on President's Day? Is the stock exchange closed? Futures open? If you're out there and if you have a moment, if you can type it in. Otherwise, I'll pull it up.
They're either a part day, they're either a partial day, partial market, or completely closed. I don't have it.
I think it's closed on the 18th, which is a Monday.
Yeah, I think you're right. The New York Stock Exchange is, but futures are probably open. They'll open Sunday night for the Monday session, and they'll trade until 9:10. Monday morning, then they'll shut down to honor the holiday and then open again Monday afternoon for the Tuesday session.
Beautiful. Okay,
so
well, let's move on.
It will be closed that day. Was that your point in bringing that up?
Well, I was just actually bringing that up to say that that is going to be – I wanted to find out what your schedule was. I think – and I don't have mine in front of me, to be honest, so I'm not sure what we're doing, but I think it's a 3-day – probably at least a 3-day weekend, with either Monday being the holiday or, again, I don't have my calendar, but we'll talk about it as we continue on through the week here. It's nothing we have to worry about right now. It just popped into my mind. So
now, we talked about this briefly last week, and everybody's like, what? And I said, yeah, check it and make sure. But because of this change in the time, the CME hours. If you look at my screen up here, okay, this is, let's go back to Friday afternoon. Like right now, I've got this last candle, the time on it is 1300 hours, which is 1 p.m. Eastern. Okay. If we go back to, here's the Globex Open on the 3rd. Okay. Now let's go back to Friday, this final candle. Look at the time on that final candle. Can you see that in the purple down there? The markets reopen on Friday afternoons.
It's peculiar.
Now, that whole thing kind of went by without a lot of, you know, fanfare or anything. But it's kind of a, well, I don't know if it's a big deal, but it's certainly a deal. I mean, people were used to for, you know, I don't know how long, but as long as I remember.
As long as I remember.
Friday afternoon, 3:15, Chicago time. I mean, the New York Stock Exchange closed at 4 Eastern, and then at 4:15 Eastern, futures closed, and then that was it until the Globex opened.
Sunday.
On Sunday night. But now, the markets do reopen Friday afternoon, guys, so just be aware of that. I think by Friday afternoon, most people are ready to just, you know, get out of there. But it certainly surprised me. The first Friday afternoon, I was sitting here and I glanced up, just to take a picture of a chart or something, and it was moving. Price was moving. I sent Michael a text. I go, "Did you realize the market's open?" And he's like, "No, it's Friday." And so, yeah. Mm-hmm. So mark that down, guys.
Yeah. It is actually, it depends on the kind of technical work or whatever that you do that may or may not be important, because some people view the Globex as one continuous stream and that's the whole market. Some people break it up, and everybody knows, because we've said this so many times, we actually do the majority of our work on the ordinary day or pit session. And so it depends on, you know, this could mean something to you. That time change could mean something to you. And it does mean something to us as well. So we've made some adjustments due to that as well. But it has to do with, you know, the nature of the trading. Because I could give you a principle right now, but I think it, rather than not go into the whole lengthy discussion about it, it has to do with whether or not prices are actually moving. Because even though the market is closed, you can make the argument that because Europe is trading or someone else is trading, that affects our market. And it does. Remember, when there was no Globex many, many, many years ago, decades ago, when you would go, Friday night would close and you would get up, and Monday morning, not Sunday, but Monday morning you'd come in, whatever events had happened overseas, we would attempt to price ourselves, you know, the markets here, in accordance with what had happened overseas. And Globex allows you to both trade that, to be aware of it, and to have a chart of what exactly is happening, because people are actually trading it. So whenever they give you more price movement, in other words, prices are actually incrementing up or down, that has meaning. And it has to. It's not an opinion of mine. It actually has to have meaning. And it has, to us, it has meaning. So it depends on how you view the market. There's nothing wrong with viewing the market as one whole stream, if you wanted to. That is that whenever they trade, that's when they're trading. But for us, because Globex, as Dwayne was showing on his chart there, you can see Globex will increment. In other words, price will be moving. From, look at the green bar that makes the top there, right where his arrow is near. And you can see the very, very small, many hours that go sideways here. Yeah, you're right there. Right in that area there. That's a very, very small amount of movement for that amount of time.
Yeah,
that's a lot of time with very, very little movement. And so that all affects your indicators and affects other things, because everything else is incrementing with it. So you have to decide, whether that's something that is meaningful enough to you, and or if it isn't, then don't worry about it. But it depends on the kind of technical work you're doing. So that's all I'm really saying. And we used to talk about this a lot more, but I've you know, ran the subject into the ground over the years. So it's just what it is. And the Globex, the markets are going to continue to change along with these time frames and when they change and so on. And it can make a difference. So you might want to experiment around. That would be a better way of saying it. Experiment around with your charts and see if your indications are better or worse, including that. That would be my best suggestion. That might be the best way to say it. Okay, so
let's just take a quick little peek here at something, and then we'll move right along. Let's go to ESH3. Get price there. Now let's go down to... I think we got too many zeros there. Let me do it much simpler. Let's go with just a 5-minute chart. Now let's go back to Friday. Friday. Okay, that's February the 4th. February the 3rd. Okay, so this is February the 1st here, which was Friday. I just wanted to see what kind of movement there was during that time period when the market reopened. Okay, this here is a 2-tick range from 1507.5 up to 1508. So even though each one of these candles got... Oh, no, this isn't volume. So this is... No, we can even do that real quick. Just go throw some volume in there. Okay, look, the volume went to... Even though the market was open and trading in a little 2-tick range, you can see that the volume just gone.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing. With the volume gone, what is the meaningfulness of the movement and so on? So yes. Just something for you to judge, and I would encourage people, and I do encourage people to practice, play around with it, experiment. Experimentation is very good. It can lead you down and give you some ideas. I want to say, and I've said this before, I did not think out or plan out or think out in advance that this is the way it should be and then go try to find that. I tried to find out what was really happening and tried to interpret that in my own way, which is what everyone does, and put ideas together from there. So some people are really smart and they figure out how things are before they even get to them. As an example, Werner Heisenberg, who figured out 50 years before we got to able to see subatomic particles, he figured out an enormously powerful principle about subatomic particles, which just goes to show how incredible, you can say all kinds of things about man, but both good and bad, but how incredible a person's intelligence would have to be to have made not the observations, but the surmising, the theoretical insight that he had in order to come up with the principles, which then 50 years later only would we be able to say, hey, that actually appears to be true. And even if it later, of course, when we delve in deeper, if it appears to have some wrinkles and other things, the fact is that he figured out, you know, for lack of a better word, a truly profound principle that, but for him, might not have been figured out even to this day. And he didn't even see a subatomic particle, so to speak, at all. He just surmised it. So but just for those of you that are interested, the principle is that subatomic particles are as well here, there, or everywhere all at the same time. And they only take an actual position when they're observed. Now, how could you have figured that out without having done any experimentations, without having done any work with subatomic particles? And that's exactly what he did. So don't discount the intelligence of the mind of man, because it is tremendously profound that he came up with that principle, I believe, and I think many, many others do, without having even seen the thing and surmised that principle and many others. And for those of you who have an interest in this subject, the subatomic world is absolutely incredibly different then the sort of Newtonian world, the world that we live in, the world of action and reaction and balls bouncing and that sort of thing, gravity and motion and things like that. But just that idea alone, that really nothing exists at all until there's an observer to see it. And then the particles take a position. They're actually in a state of flux. They could be here, there, or anywhere until you observe them. Try to wrap your mind around that. And that is, right now, science's best understanding of what subatomic particles are doing. They are in a positionless state. You cannot know their position. Once you observe them, then they sort of, quote-unquote, choose a position. They then take their position. Kind of weird, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of goes against everything that we possibly see. I mean, it goes back to that thing, you know, remember the question when you were in junior high, if you're as old as me, you know, if a tree falls in a forest, you know, and you're not there, does it make a sound? Well, actually, a much, much more pertinent question now is there a forest if you're not there? Not about what happens in the forest, but is there a forest at all?
Does it even exist?
Does it even exist without you being there to observe it? However, we're all trying to make a couple bucks out of the market. Can we get on with the markets here? Good Lord. All right. We will. All right. You don't get me on a tangent. Okay.
I love it when you talk to yourself.
I do. I have great conversations
with
myself.
You have fabulous conversations with yourself.
Sometimes they're good. I mean,
I have to agree. They're very good.
Sometimes they do.
It's the only way he can have an intelligent conversation.
Is it with myself? Remember the old thing, you know, I can't remember the joke, you know, if the phone rings and you answer it, it's, you know, I can't remember. It's something, never mind. It's really good to remember the jokes before you tell them. But it's just laugh. It's like the guy in the theater. He says, "Hey, man, I can't see the screen. You're so big, I can't see the screen." And the guy just turns around and says, "Just laugh when I laugh." That's because he...
Isn't that out of a Woody Allen movie?
I don't know, but it's a really, really old joke. Okay, we'll move on to the gold market. Now, got a few important things to say about the gold market. We've been talking... Mm-hmm. The gold market for quite some time, about January marking an important bottom in gold. And that prompted our long position that we talked about for those of you with reflected wave, for the January 28th and 29th daily reflected wave bottom in gold. We're going to continue to hold those gold positions. Our institutional and other people have the stop levels and so on. Today, gold went down and tested some important levels, but didn't get anywhere near the critical levels. And gold is up, you know, somewhat today. They're up at 1676. So for people who are long from either of those days, even if they're long from, you know, in the 1660s, we're still in good shape here, and we'll continue to follow this through. We do have a roadmap that's going to come out for gold. I would encourage you to sign up with Page Trader if you want the roadmap and be able to take advantage of the upcoming move in gold here. And you can trade it, you know, long-term, short-term, however you want to do it. But I like the idea of every trader having at least sampled a number of different things that you can do with markets. You can trade them on a micro level where you're just trading almost like the floor guys, where they're trading for just little teenies, like 16th of a cent. That's not for me, but it is for some people, and some people have done very well with that. There are very few floor traders left, so now this has become a different game, that game. Then there's the day trading, which everyone should experience, which you're trading intraday swings on some basis, whether it's very short term or somewhat longer term, but still intraday. And then there's day swing trading, maybe you could call it, which is where you're looking for longer term, multi-day, and then even multi-week or multi-month positions. And I happen to believe that that can be a very powerful addition to the intraday trading for people. That does require more margin. It does require your being with and living with yourself with a position and so on. And it does get a little wearing sometimes. It can wear you out because every day you wake up and you're in a different frame of mind, so to speak. And some days you wake up and you say, listen, you know, the thing's been running in our favor. I'm tired of waiting. I'm going to go in and book it. And you go back and forth with those. And that's why it's important to have a plan. And if you don't have a plan, I would suggest that you start to develop one and develop one based on your own observation or someone else's observation. As an example, if you were utilizing Dwayne and Michael's material, they have some rules laid out. Perhaps, you know, you follow them. We have reflected wave. We have rules for holding positions and trading to particular levels and so on. And use those ideas to help build your plan. And because if you don't have a plan, the problem is that you end up relying on how you feel that day. And that's not a good way to trade in the markets, how you feel that day. How you feel that day is probably one of the worst ways to trade in the market. And this is why we see so many firms going to the quant type of trading where they have the computers and they're trading in and out zillions of times following sets of rules. We have other traders who have sets of rules that are built into the computer and they autopilot them and they watch them sort of like an airline pilot simply watches the machine, you know, because most of the flights you fly on are fully computerized. And the pilots are there to watch the machine do what it does. But you still have to be a fully experienced pilot, and you have to know everything that's going on, because just in case that machine has a malfunction or some kind of an error that later could be determined what it is. But right then and there, you're flying at 600 miles an hour, and you've got 200 people on board. Somebody has to be there to manage that. So it's kind of like that with trading. So if you don't think you have rules or you're not sure you have rules, then you don't have rules, because you'll know for sure if you have rules.
Yeah.
It's very helpful. It keeps you out of trouble, and the way you feel that day won't affect your trading so much. So remember I told you the story last week about the guy who had the garage filled with all the people, uh-huh, and they were trading, and yeah, he was a guy who says, I don't know, I just know the markets. You know, I just trade them, man. You know, I just know them. And that's okay. There's probably a lot of people that would make that statement. But that what it ended up meaning was he sort of was trading how he felt on a particular day. He really wasn't following rules. He was reading into things, and it let him have way too much leeway. It let him have too much leeway for his own good. And in the end, it didn't work out well for him. So keep that in mind. I think that's important. And one of the things that Robin Dane does, I happen to know this because I've eaten lunch with her, and we've laughed and giggled about everything related to markets. But one of the things that she does with her students, she's teaching, you know, discipline and psychology and so on, is she makes sure that you have some rules.
Mm-hmm.
She's not going to have you trading, you know, from your hip.
No, rules are there to really protect you, and they establish your disciplines. And again, our goal is to get to boredom as quickly as possible.
Right.
And rules do that.
They're supposed to help you get it right too.
Yeah.
You have the rule there because that's the right thing to do under a set of conditions and so on.
Yeah.
The market's as big as life. It's going to show you conditions that exceed your rules. You will have to step in off of autopilot. You will have to make some decisions from time to time. There's no question about it.
Mm-hmm.
So, but for the most part, you want the majority of your trading off of rules. The hotel casinos don't come to work every day. The management, you know, figuring out what they feel like doing with the players that day and what kind of odds they want to give them. All the odds and all the rules are already in place, fixed. Mm-hmm. And
rules. Even with Red Rock Search and Rescue, we have rules that protect us. I mean, there are rules there that specifically, you know, really look at your trading, and it really helps you fine-tune your strategy or your methodology that you're approaching the market with. So it's
right.
They're really important to have, really, really important.
Yeah, okay, and that's well said.
And they change, and they can change.
They can change. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's move on to that. So with regard to gold, keep that in mind. We're playing off of the idea that there's a monthly bottom mm-hmm. in January, and we think there's the potential for higher prices. We have a roadmap coming out on that. We'll give you all the details on that, but at least this amount of information will be helpful, I think, for people who are in the market either already off of our earlier reflected wave bottom or are you planning on getting into the market. So we'll move on past the gold market. We've talked about the U.S. Treasury bond earlier. If there's any questions about that, you know, ask me, Treasury bonds up, S&P down, you know, there's that common theme that we see so many times. There's some important dates coming up for the Treasuries as well. The euro, this euro currency is very tightly connected to the dollar. I have found, and I'm sure you have as well, that there are many, many indications between these two markets, but quite often both markets won't give the same indication, even though they're very tightly connected. So you might see a very good buy signal, as an example, in the dollar, but you won't see really much of a sell signal in the euro. And yet, if you were to, you could almost, and I'm not suggesting this, trade the euro off that buy signal in the dollar. I think it's wiser and a higher probability to trade the buy signal in the dollar rather than proxy it over and say, since the dollar is going up, the euro will go down. You're adding a little bit of extra risk in there, even though I have to say I see it work time and time again. I think your larger position anyway would be in the dollar, and your smaller position would be shorting the euro. If you're going to trade the other one, consider doing that. But the fact is that you won't always get the same signals, even though they're very well connected. So that's something. And so the euro is down today. We completed a nice roadmap up recently and got out last week on Thursday. This decline will be used, will be important later in the week, and we'll talk about it. This may trigger another roadmap. We even have the prices that we believe the market's going to go down to that will be available to Messenger Pro subscribers. So if you like the short side of the euro, long side of the dollar, we have prices on the downside that the euro will complete. And if a person wanted to and he wants to add that little extra additional risk, if he's long the dollar, when the euro reaches its prices on the downside, you would use that information to get out of your long positions in the dollar. You could do that. But I still think trading the market that has the indication is a wiser move than doing the proxy thing. That you always add a little bit of extra risk in there that's not really necessary. You know, it's like saying, why not just lower the pressure in the tires of your car, you know, by 17 pounds and then drive around? It'll work most likely, but you're adding just a little bit of unnecessary risk there. You'll still get to where you're going, but there's no real need to do it, and it just adds risk. So a lot of people call us. Sometimes we get these calls where they say, well, you know, I like gold, but I'm going to be in the GLD or I'm going to be in this other index, but I'm taking the signal off of gold. You can do that, but it does add some risk because the GLD, the ETF, it doesn't necessarily move like the gold does. In fact, sometimes there's quite nice divergences between the two. That means, you know, there's that risk being played out for you. So we want to try to eliminate as much risk as we can. You can't eliminate all of it, nor can you know all of it, obviously. You can't know all of the risk, but you can have a very good idea of what the probabilities are. And that's what we do, what we're all doing in trading, is ascertaining the probabilities and then effectively, with rules, trading those, making good, right decisions along the way. Okay, so let's see. Let's move over to the crude oil market. Crude as part, we've already completed the first part of a roadmap up in crude. And for those of you with reflected wave, and now know those of you that don't, you know that tomorrow, February 5th, is the next important daily bottom in crude. We've given our subscribers some important levels that we believe should not be touched during this decline into tomorrow. That will allow us to be buyers. I know that sounds odd because some of you might be expecting us to want to short it, but we are going to be buyers for the advance, and that advance off of the February 5th bottom is going to be very important to read into where how crude is acting in accordance to the larger roadmap. You can get that roadmap by coming to pagetrader.com. This crude roadmap is a two-stage roadmap. It started back in December. For a big move up into from in the mid-80s up to 95 into January and so on. So the whole thing is listed in Messenger Pro if you want to check that out. Let's see. There's a few other markets.
Are you,
Duane,
still, you're still in March on crude, Dave?
Yeah, we are still in March on crude.
Okay.
And I think that is the right month now.
Yeah, I think so.
For that.
Yeah.
Let's see, what else was there? Somebody had asked about BIDU, B-I-D-U. That might have been Layla. And
yes, it was. It was Layla.
Yeah, and Layla is in, I think, England. That's where Layla is.
She is in the UK somewhere.
She could be having a spot of tea right now.
Yes.
With biscuits.
With biscuits. The English do have a charm. We were talking last couple of weeks about Bidu, that it, you know, we had a weekly reflected wave top back on, well, let me get the date here, but it's just recently that put the top in on the week of January 14th, which was 1 week late at a slightly higher price than the on-time week. And they have a multi-week decline underway. So we've suggested remaining short or not doing anything on the long side until further notice. Tesla, the electric car stock, they are building up to, not every week, but up to 400 of their Model S cars now per week. This will help satisfy the people that were the Wall Streeters that were complaining that they were not building enough to make money. But if you know, if they built enough and didn't have the quality control, the same Wall Streeters would be there saying, well, they have a great product, but it's actually not such good quality. So Tesla had only one thing they could do in 2012, which was to build these slowly and make absolutely sure that their cars matched the quality. You cannot sacrifice quality in the position they're in, and that hurt their stock for a while. I'm still bullish on their stock, as I've been since day one. And since day one, the stock opened on month one, anyway, opened at $19, and it is now trading at $37. I continue to be bullish on this stock throughout this year. This is really not a technical, it's partially technical because you can't look at the market without seeing the technicals, but I do believe in what they're doing, and I think they're going to continue having great success with this. There were so many naysayers. I just want to say this. If you're a naysayer or you're a person who believes a certain thing and you're going to go all over the internet and post it, if you're going to do that, and if it happens to turn out that you're just plain old wrong, then show up again and just let people know that you were wrong. How's that? Mm-hmm. Just be the first guy to ever do that.
Yeah,
that's what I'm
up.
Waiting for. The first guy. The first guy, because we've not seen it yet.
Yep.
You just haven't seen it. You think this conspiracy is going on. You think this thing is going on. You think this isn't going to happen. You think this revolution is dead, and you've got all the reasons for it. That's fine.
Yep.
You think the year 2000, the world's going to come to an end. You think the year 2012, the world's going to come to an end. Whatever you think, go ahead and post it and show all the reasons and show all the negativity and everything else you've got to show. But then when you turn out to be wrong, show up for that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Just once. I'm waiting for the first guy in the world to do that, because I have not seen that happen yet. If you have an example of somebody posting what they think is going to happen, and when it doesn't happen, you actually see them come back and say, I guess I got that wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to see evidence of that, because I haven't seen it ever, not once.
Only in some of these, like Schwarzenegger and Tiger Woods, mm-hmm. you know, they're actually trying to get back with their wives. I commend them for that. I don't love what they did, but I commend them for realizing it still takes guts to do that in the public eye like that. It still takes guts.
Yeah.
I mean, they got nabbed, and that's part of it. But
yeah.
But you're right. And I like the Tesla chart. It looks great.
Yeah, no, they've
Except
had a good
that November pullback. I mean, it looks great.
Well, they have there's a lot of speculation around them, and many, many people, the naysayers for Tesla or for the electric car revolution or for the year 2000 or whatever you want to say it, they're, you know, I just want them to show back up and say, you know what, I guess I didn't get that right, because here we are and here's the thing running. So there you are. But they don't do that. And you know what? I don't believe in your talk if you're not, I don't know, just man enough to be there if you happen to not be right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're not going to make a very good trader if you're the kind of guy that posts a bunch of stuff and then when you turn out wrong, you just don't say anything. Maybe
that's the thing I really hate about the internet. You know, that people can post stuff that may totally. In fact, that commercial of the New Yorker, the beautiful, this real cute blonde, and she's talking to a friend, and she says, oh, yeah, you know, he says, how do you know that that's right? Well, I heard it on the internet. And he says, oh, it has to be true. And he says, you know, I'm having a date with a French model, and this really, really horrible looking guy comes up and he goes, "Bonjour."
Yeah.
And that, you know, that's so true. I mean, just
that
people can just say anything.
It's a good thing they can say anything. It would be a nicer thing if once they've really made their point,
yeah,
and if it doesn't work out, that they just show up again. It would be
exactly
good for them and good for everybody else. It would teach a kind of an etiquette,
yeah,
that the internet needs, that we've lost, which is,
yeah,
that if you're going,
yeah,
to take a position, fair enough. If it doesn't work out, come back and say it didn't work out. And why is that important? Because by letting you off the hook every time, you are going to have wilder and wilder stories to spread, because you never have to take responsibility when they don't work out that way. So if you start taking responsibility, it'll set you straight. It'll show others there is an etiquette to this whole thing. And you don't just spray your dirt out there and then just disappear.
And it builds trust.
It does.
You know,
there should
trust
be a little bit of an etiquette there.
And you've mentioned a couple times if things haven't worked.
I think there was one time, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think at least one that you mentioned. I mean, it happens. It's in this business. And how can
you
build any kind of...
Oh, if you're talking about markets, it happens.
Yeah, in the markets.
Yeah, no, of course.
You know, I mean,
no,
you just can't.
You can't be perfect, but
no.
The internet has its own thing where people do,
yeah,
that. And the reason I was bringing that up is because there were so many naysayers about Tesla and, you know... They're not on the internet saying anything right now with the stock near the highs. They get very strangely quiet and somehow less interested in talking, mm-hmm, about things. And listen, maybe they were right. But here's the thing. If they were right, gosh, you're going to see a lot more of them, aren't you?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'd be all over that.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just the way it goes. So
can,
I'd like
can
to
we look
them...
at soda?
Well,
can we,
you know,
can
here's
you bring
the thing.
Up...
It's not just the internet. Jim Cramer goes on his show Mad Money on CNBC and tells people that there's no better investment on planet Earth and your money could not be safer than with Bear Stearns. Within 2 weeks, they go belly up and he is back on TV in a canoe paddling going, "See, I told you guys. I told you guys." And
did he tell us? He did.
Yeah, he told us it was the safest place you could put your money.
Yeah.
And yeah,
that's a good example. He has to come back and maybe he has to, you know, flip the story over or whatever, but there should be some, you know, people need to grow up and take responsibility for their positions. You're right, Dwayne. It's everywhere.
Well, the legitimate guys called him on the carpet and said, "Wait a minute." And they put videos out on the internet that said, "Look, here's you saying this, and now
right,
here's you saying this. What do you have to say for yourself?" And he just comes back on his show and makes a couple crazy sound effects, mm-hmm, rolls up his shirt sleeves and starts, you know, screaming at the camera and foaming at the mouth as if it and CNBC, God bless them, they just keep signing his paycheck because he's good for ratings.
Yeah. Well, and he lives in a world where that's what it is. It's ratings, and it would be nice to see him come back and say, "Yeah, no, I, you know," but the problem for him is that he actually may have some liability by telling people where to put their money and so on. And he's avoiding that as well. But, you know, we all know what we're talking about here. Just if, you know, the internet encourages you to take positions behind the screen, you know, behind so people don't know who you are, you have the name and all that stuff. It would be good for you, if you're one of these people, to go out and take responsibility for whatever your call was rather than just slinking away in the dark at night when it doesn't quite work out that way. I would have a ton of respect for anybody that does that, and I think their next call for what they think is going to happen would be a little better thought out. But when they don't have to take responsibility for it, they just get wilder and wilder and wilder. Like, as an example, there's an internet on the internet now, and it's all over the place, about the school shooting with the 18 or 20 kids, that was actually put together by Barack Obama because he wants to – I mean, this is so patently preposterous, and they actually have evidence that they believe shows that that's the case, that you know, this whole thing was put together. Those are the kinds of things. It actually encourages thought and thinking and stuff. I'm just saying, fair enough, if you're going to state it. But if it gets proven that it isn't the case, I'm just waiting for one. I just want the first guy. I want to see it happen once. Somebody come back and say, "Yeah, we didn't have that one right." But human nature, it makes it very difficult for people to do that.
Somebody just typed in, Tim, he says, even Harold Camping, who thought the world was ending and made quite a big deal of it, when he was wrong, he actually did come out and make a statement.
He did.
And he said, I was wrong, forgive me. So.
Yeah, and that is admirable, even though in the face, even if it's in the face of completely, it's obvious the thing didn't happen. He's calling for the biggest event in the history of the world, which is the ending of the world, and it didn't happen. But at least he did come out and say something, and I do give him credit for that. I do give him credit for that. And I just want to say again, the only guy that I know of in hundreds of years of making these kinds of forecasts, there's only one guy, and Dwayne, what's his name? The guy that
the one guy
we always talk about. You know, the guy that's made all the forecasts that called – suddenly I'm having trouble remembering his name now.
The perma-bear.
You know that guy?
The guy I don't know that guy.
The
guy
what's his name?
I know who you're talking about, I think. The Elliott Wade guy?
No. I'm talking about the guy that forecast the finding of Atlantis and the da 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 and the forecasting.
Nostradamus.
No. He's in this century, last century, 100 years. Can't think of his name. I sound good on the radio, don't I?
Oh, are you talking about the sleeping prophet?
Yeah.
Is that who you're talking
what's
about?
His name?
Are you talking about
what's
Edward
his name?
Casey?
Yeah, that's it. Edward Casey. Thank you.
Oh, Edward Casey.
Now that's the only guy. That's the only guy that I'm aware of for the last several hundred years that made not one but literally thousands of forecasts, which the majority – there's a whole library worth of his forecasts.
Yeah.
He wasn't speaking to God. He wasn't speaking to angels. He wasn't speaking to – there was nothing spiritual about it. He actually claimed that this was something that anybody could do, and he was accessing this information because in his estimation, the future actually exists right now. And the information about the future is available right now. There really isn't past and future. It always is now. And that in that now, everything is available. And he somehow could access future information in the now. It sounds almost preposterous, or it does sound preposterous, except for the fact that he was right a really, really high percentage of the time. And he did these forecasts thousands and thousands of times. Now, that's the only guy that I'm aware of that was able to pull off that kind of thing. And I'm sorry, but all the other quote-unquote religious ones got it wrong repeatedly and for hundreds of years. There's only one guy that I know of, and that's Joseph Smith. Edward Casey. Joseph Smith is a Mormon guy. He didn't get it quite right either,
did he? Edgar Casey was a Christian.
He taught Sunday school at some point, or was involved with some Sunday school at some point as well. He did not make the claim that this had anything to do with speaking to God or having angels speak to him.
Yeah, right.
Or
right.
in any way communicating with someone or some other entity. He was doing this on his own.
He called it taking a nap. In his own words, he called it taking a nap.
Right. So, and he also, if he didn't get it right, would say, okay, that was off a little bit. But go check it out. For those of you who are new, really, if you want to see something that will really open your eyes, go check out the forecasts that this guy made. They were all recorded on the date and time that he made them. It's recorded history. That's it, as far as I know. There's no other people that were able to pull that off. And is credit due to Harold Camping for coming out and at least taking credit for his prediction, even though it didn't work out, and so on. But there is one guy that really did do it and could do it and did it repeatedly. And so check it out sometime.
If you
Edgar
type
Casey.
Into your address bar of your sleek Chrome browser or into the old-fashioned Google search box, just type in Edgar Casey CFRN, and up pops that's the other one. Oh, this is one about Gene Dixon. Let's see if this is the one. Nope, that's not the one. Well, anyway, go search it. I did. I wrote an article, and I posted some pictures about him. I'll find it, and I'll put the link in the chat room for you guys.
Yeah.
But there's a blog post out there, because we've had a number of conversations about him.
Well, we started talking about him. Originally, I brought him up when we were talking about these kinds of forecasts for ending of the times and so on, and that all of them there's a 100% track record of the people who claim they're speaking with God, have special insight into the Bible, speak to angels, are getting special messages from on high. They're 100% wrong, all of them. And here's a guy who made absolutely no connection with any of that, and he sat down to take his naps, and he's been right a very, very high percentage of the time. And it's a really remarkable thing. And what it does is, putting aside all that, it makes it interesting, isn't it, that that is possible to do. He was a human being. He was able to access in some way information that is not ordinarily available to us through our senses. And he was able to do it over and over and over and over again. And it really stands out as a remarkable thing. He was human. This wasn't an angel coming down. This was a regular, ordinary human being that could do this. And when you really investigate and take a look at what things he said and how definitive he was, and he made stock market forecasts, he made forecasts for people's health, he could determine, not by looking at a person and touching them, he would go into his nap, so to speak, or his state, and was able to ascertain if somebody, what the illness was they had, and so on. He made no big play about it. He didn't charge people money, or if he did, it was extremely small amounts of money. It was just something that he had somehow stumbled upon in his own consciousness and was able to put it to work. And up to the day that he had a stroke, and I think ultimately that killed him, he continued to try to help people. There he is right there with it. So just an ordinary guy, except for that.
Yep.
Edgar Casey cited the importance of Jesus. So, yeah, this is good reading, guys. If you go to that blog post on CFRN, let me just give you the link. I'll give you the link to this page here. I'll put that in the chat box.
Yeah, by the way. Oh, go ahead, Dwayne. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. I'm just going to put that in the chat box.
I was just going to say that if you're impressed by his track record, he was mentioning Jesus as a person who actually existed, a man that actually existed and walked the face of earth. So here's a guy that was able to go back into time, so to speak, and if anybody has I know this is CFRN, but there are many people who would make the argument that have made the argument that perhaps Jesus didn't exist at all, and we certainly all know for a fact for ourselves that he did, and yet here's Edgar Casey, who can go forward and backward in time, and he is mentioning him. So I think there's a very big, aside from whatever he has to say about him, he's pointing out to the actual existence of the man. He actually was on the planet, did walk the earth. It's not a story, it's a fact as far as Casey's concerned, and go check out his facts and go see how accurate he was. It's life-changing. It really is. So, okay, so we'll move on from there. Dwayne, anything else, or Robin, anything else?
Soda.
Okay.
I brought it up. Yeah, it's kind of been selling off here the last couple of days.
Yeah, so buy the rumor, sell the news, right?
Yeah.
So buy the rumor, sell the news. And I just checked on the latest headlines for soda, and they said that the Super Bowl banned commercial has gone viral.
Which,
good.
Oh, yeah.
The link that I sent you, the Super Bowl one that they...
That. You know, it was okay. The commercial was... Yeah. Well, it was definitely a shot at Coke and Pepsi. And the actual commercial itself was good the way they produced it. But the meaning, the fact that all those bottles started just blowing up...
Yeah.
That kind of didn't make sense.
Yeah, it's funny, but, you know, I wonder how their thinking was, because to pull a commercial together that quickly and to pull a backup plan that quickly, they had to have it in the plan. So my question is, did they have somebody really, really exceptional on their marketing team that allowed this to get banned?
Soda had to pay extra to get banned. You know, it costs a lot of money to be on the Super Bowl, but you got to pay extra if you want your commercial banned, because then you really get a lot of publicity.
Oh my gosh, it's unbelievable! I mean, to go viral, that you can't. How do you even put a price tag on it?
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah,
so,
it is.
You know who? So you're not really sure, but you're right. I don't think that the commercial in itself was a drop dead commercial. It wasn't. You know, fabulous. I think there's a better way to go through it. I kind of like the 500 bottles or something, save whatever.
Maybe one of the most interesting commercials, certainly not the best, and it didn't get a lot of response. It didn't go viral. In fact, there was only – I read the number this morning. Most people go, if they like those commercials, they go right over to YouTube and then watch it a few times. But the commercial for Scientology, which was –
I didn't see that one. I'm going to have to go back and
only
see that.
See, some of the ads only play in select markets.
Oh.
Some are national, some are regional, and the Scientology played in the New York City market. It played in the Los Angeles market, and I don't know what other markets it played in. I don't know if it played in the Phoenix market or not. But it was about a minute and ten – I guess it was a 60-second commercial roughly. And I did – once I saw the headline that it had been on, I didn't see it in real time because I guess it wasn't in my market. And so I went to YouTube and I did watch the commercial. And it was mildly intriguing, but it didn't really say anything. It's just kind of like, you know, if you're looking for the truth or something, you know, check us out.
Yeah. The one other one that I liked
– God Made a Farmer. Cliff, yes, you're right. That was an awesome commercial. Dodge Ram, the pickup truck, that was a good commercial.
I liked the Jeep one. You went through a little story, but you didn't know it was a Jeep commercial till the very. Oh, it was with the military. Somehow with the military.
I didn't see that.
And it was very, very patriotic. And at the very end, you had Jeep in there.
Mm. Yeah, Cliff says Jeep was for vets. Well, the farmer one was along the same lines. You didn't realize it. In fact, I thought I had the TV on the wrong channel. I go, what happened? I'm on the wrong channel. Because it's supposed to be the Super Bowl commercial, and this did not sound like a commercial.
Yeah.
It sounded like a documentary about, you know, how patriotic farmers are and how much we owe them. And it was really good. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. A lot of thought goes into these. I mean, it's big bucks and a lot of thought goes into them. It's the only time that I actually enjoy watching the commercials is during the Super Bowl because they are creative.
I like watching the Clios every year. That's like the Oscars for commercials. They give awards for the best commercials. And
of course, I have to say that I was a little bit drawn to the Calvin Klein commercial.
Oh, I didn't see that one. And the one with the girl, the supermodel, kissing the nerd, that got panned by everyone. Nobody really seemed to like it. They thought it was too drawn out, and it just they didn't like it.
I didn't like that one.
So,
either.
David, on the soda here, is there a top end? Yeah. What do you got?
Does David have a top end on that?
That's
my
asking.
Question.
Yeah. David, do you have a top end here on soda?
Do I have a top end, or does soda have a top end on soda? Let's take a quick look at it here.
Either way.
Give me just a moment. I do want to clarify something as well also that, just real quick before we go to the soda, back on crude, because we've had some people ask some questions about this, we have a crude roadmap that we're one half the way through, and any new information that we give out about crude will be given in the Messenger Pro product. We're not going to be giving it out on the radio program because it is a roadmap. But any of the numbers about where crude is going down and where we're going to short it and stuff like that, that is to be given out in Messenger Pro. I may have made it sound like we had already given out the short entry and so on. We have not yet given that out in Messenger Pro. As it sits right now, just to clarify for people, we're done with the up leg and we're waiting for the February 5th bottom to be put in, and the bounce off that is going to perhaps trigger the next leg for us, and we'll give that all that information out on Messenger Pro. So do that. So now, having talked about that, let me clarify. We spoke last month about soda having a top that was due in February of this year, of 2013. It's likely that the top is already in January. In other words, the top came 1 month early, and we would then expect a decline off of this, a multi-month decline off of this top. So that's what I'm expecting at this point.
Okay.
That is what I'm expecting. Now, having said that, you know, I don't, we're not watching this day by day, but there's other shorter term important turns that are going to occur in here off the daily and so on. But I think the bigger picture is that February was the on-time month for a top, and I do believe that that's going to contain the market here. And I do like the idea, sort of the news flow of, the, you know, originally the buy the rumor for the market to go up into the Super Bowl. And it did actually come down prior to the Super Bowl starting, but it did have a really nice run up into within a couple of days of the Super Bowl, and then we had the big move down. There may have been, that move down may have been because of what happened with the commercial, with them being blocked from doing it at first and having to redo the commercial. So that was a twist around, because we had the date, which is the date of the Super Bowl, and the market advanced, and then suddenly when the news came out about the commercial not being taken, that's when the decline started. So you would have had to have, you know, each one of these is a little different, but I still stand by my long-standing statement about buy the rumor, sell the fact.
Okay. Anyway.
Now, the redo, that got blocked as well, right, at the last minute?
I don't know.
I think it did.
Oh, I never didn't hear that.
Yeah, there was no soda commercial on the Super Bowl last night.
And which you don't know, especially today with Dow down so much, is it just a reflection of the Dow too, and what's happening with the market? So I want to see an up day in the market and then look at soda at that time. You know what I mean? I kind of see what I just picked up just now was Netflix. What the heck is going on with Netflix? It's up like 5%, almost 5.5%, over 5.5%.
Well, they launched their new show, House of Cards. Their goal is to become HBO before HBO becomes them. And this weekend, their newest in-house production, it's called A House of Cards, which is actually a remake of a popular television series from the UK back in the early 90s. It's political, you know, Washington, D.C. is the backdrop for this little mini-series, 13 episodes. And what they did that's very interesting is they posted all 13 episodes at once. With Lilyhammer, I don't think they did that. And now, in my opinion, Lilyhammer was far more engaging than this new show they've done, House of Cards. The critics have kind of, they've given it about a 75% out of 100 as far as, you know, 7.5 stars out of 10. It's okay. It's got Kevin Spacey in it. The acting's good. You know, the writing's good. It's it has the feel and quality of an HBO production. And so that is the goal of Netflix now, is to start creating their own unique content. HBO, of course, we all know, has done that for many years. And so Netflix says, we need to become HBO before they can become us. And the new HBO to Go is the first step HBO has made into trying to become a Netflix. The only drawback to HBO to Go's idea is that in order to use that application to be able to watch HBO's content on your iPhone or your iPad or any kind of tablet or your computer, you have to subscribe to HBO through your cable provider. In other words, you can't just go straight to HBO and say, I just want to subscribe to HBO. You've got to go through. And until they remove that hurdle and that roadblock, I think it's going to be a tough go for them. But that app is incredibly popular with people who already subscribe to HBO.
Sure.
The app itself is free.
Yeah.
Now, there's a way around that by using Slingbox, but that's a whole other story. So.
Yeah, I always get very excited when I'm watching the tape, because I just have CNBC and watch the tape. And if the market's down really, really far, you know, like this, a big day, down day, and you see such an up move on a down day. I mean, I just love those kind of stocks. And to all of a sudden come on the radar, you know, and vice versa. So on an up day, a real down stock. So,
this thing got hit really hard. This thing got hit really hard back when they had that big snafu over changing their business model. I mean, they were a $300 stock, and they tanked all the way down to 50 bucks at some point.
Yeah, that's a huge move.
Yeah,
That's since August.
July of 2011 was their peak. And then in 2012.
Oh, 12. Okay. Yeah, gotcha.
Yeah, and then... So this looks pretty good. I mean, I love their business plan. I mean, what's not to love? Cable is so expensive. If you want to have cable in your home today, you got to get different packages, and you got to do the sports thing, or you got to have some specialty deal to get the other deal. And if you run internet, telephone, and a basic cable package through your house, you're looking at, you know, $150-$200
at least.
Yeah.
At least.
You start throwing in some HBO and, you know, some of the other stuff, and it goes crazy.
Yep.
This is $10 a month.
I'm going to have a private conversation with you, Dwayne, to get my bill down, because that's exactly what I'm experiencing, and I'm only watching basic stuff. I mean, it's ridiculous. I know there's a way to do it cheaper.
Oh, I got your email and your voicemail, and I will send you the links to those podcasts for the Coach's
Perfect.
Corner.
Okay. And speaking of Coach's Corner, I want to just give out the subject for the week, and we're going to go how to manage procrastination. Okay, on Friday, that's what we're going
to
talk about on the Coach's Corner. Okay. And may I pass you four quotes?
Sure.
Well, I think we got more markets to go, but if you need to run, go right ahead.
Okay. These are, we feel most alive when we take a chance. That's the topic. We know what happens to people who stay in the middle of the road. They get run over. Second one is, I'm in love with the potential of miracles. For me, the safest place is out on a limb. That's Shirley MacLaine, interestingly enough. And the chief danger in life is that you may take too many precautions. Alfred Adler. And finally, it is so tempting to try the most difficult thing possible. Jenny Jerome Churchill.
Is that Winston Churchill's wife or daughter?
I don't know. I think it might be his daughter.
Okay.
I'd have to check. I didn't check it, but it intrigued me that it was her. Possibly her.
Dave, there's a question here on Google. Do you think this is it for Google? Is it all over? They got downgraded today by some analyst.
Let's take a quick look. Do I think it's all over for Google?
That's what the question. Has Google reached its top at 775?
Let's take a quick look at a couple of different things here. And this is just catching me at this moment, but give me just a moment here to look at it. You know, Google has more than one trick up its sleeve. It's not just a company that has a single product. It has a number of different products, any one of which could really relight fire that may that may occur. But let's take a look. They're certainly not in a bad position technically on the charts. I know that they're down here, but we did call for. The same way that we're calling for the first 6 months, this is a longer-term thing, first 6 months of this year for a more important top in Google, and we're in the on-time period, the first half of the year. Now, that's a very large time frame, but one of the things I like to do with this stock is let's let them trade. Let's let them, you know, they're down a little bit today. It's not a big deal. The stock trades at $760, so to be down $15 does not end Google. However, having said that, they did do something interesting. This is, for me, interesting because in this stock, we have something in our work called a square. And it's not an actual physical square that you would draw it on your chart or anything, but I reference it that way for a certain reason. And today, they opened right at their square and are closing below it. So that means that short-term, as long as Google continues to close below their square, which is roughly, $767 and roughly 70 cents, 65 cents, 70 cents, as long as they, I would expect them, here's two things, I would expect them to continue to close below that square for the next several days. That normally is bearish. When the market closes above and then opens back below it, they're regaining their square, and that puts the market in a weaker position. So I would expect at least several days of them not closing above that. Now, if they do close back above it, that should that actually is a better position for the stock at that point. So that's a little bit that I can tell you, other than that the Google and S&P both have cycles that are running for the first 6 months of this year to put in a much more important top. And you know what the numbers are. We've already gone over it in the S&P. But we can talk about Google over the next several days with regard to this price level.
Okay.
So.
All right.
And I think that's everything we have, Dwayne. We've covered a lot of ground.
On corn, there was one question about corn.
Okay. Butter it, a little salt, and sometimes Tabasco sauce can be actually really nice on corn.
Okay.
I know. It's just...
All right.
I used to be funnier on the show.
No, we're
I just
laughing,
want people
man.
To know that you can, you know, just think back to when I used to be funny.
Hey, they're all recorded. You can go out there and yuck it up.
Okay. All right. What was the question on corn?
ZCH for me.
Yeah. What was the question? What do we do with it, or where are we at? Or
well, the question would be, it's corn, question mark. That's all I got.
Oh, okay. Well, you know what? We're in the on-time week. The week of February 4th is the on-time week for a top. For those of you with reflected wave, you know about this. You also know about earlier we had called for corn to come down to $6.75 in the week of December 24th. It took an extra week, or 2 weeks actually, to get there. It actually made a low of 6.78. Didn't quite touch the 75 level. They've rallied off of that. Perfect reflected wave behavior. So we're looking for a top. If you want, I like the idea, if you're going to short it at $7.44 to $7.48, I like that. If they can get up there or a little bit lower, and use a protective stop above those levels on hourly or daily closes, but there should ordinarily, after this week, this is the on-time week, there should be a multi-week decline. So we can continue to talk about corn as it gets into this point. But one of the things that corn is doing is it's hitting an important level. It did hit the important level 1 week early. That can be a trigger for people who are aggressive to take an early, smaller position. See, all of the aggressive people want to take their biggest position at the most aggressive point. Doesn't it make more sense to take a smaller position at the most aggressive point, and then add to the position when it does confirm later? Rather, though, most aggressive people like to take the biggest position at the most aggressive point, and that seems like that's taking on too much risk in any one thing. If you want to be aggressive and you can trade, you know, 10 lots or whatever, then why not put on three of them at the aggressive point, and then if the market continues to confirm, add to that later as the confirmation continues. Then you have a mix. You have a hybrid trade of the aggressive entry and the ordinary, and you can probably do very well. I would bet you would do a whole lot better over time doing that rather than loading up on your aggressive position entry with all of your positions. Then consider taking a smaller position at the aggressive. You can get that out of your system and then put the rest on at ordinary. So last week would have been the time. This week, I like the idea if they get up there and if they touch those levels again, the 744 to 746 to 7 level, that would be something to consider. But I'd like to see a little bit more of this week complete prior to adding any new positions, because today's only Monday. Okay, I live in the world of I'll pay, I'll lose, I will take less money, I don't know how to put it, and get more confirmation. And at the moment that you've got that signal and you put your position on, it may not feel the greatest at that point, but the trade is more likely to work in your favor, and that works out over time. So I do lean on more confirmation and less profit. But the profit I do get is often easier to get, doesn't cause me the torture, and I wasn't put here to torture myself. You know, don't torture yourself, Gomez. That's my job. Adam's Family, 1968.
That's good.
Great
program. Quite a memory.
I know. Anyway, listen, that's everything I've got for today, Dwayne. As always, thank you for having me on. I'll be here tomorrow. and look forward to seeing how the market handles these, the S&P handles this potential bottom that we're putting in here right now.
Yeah, and thank you, Duane, also for having me. And it's a great day in Las Vegas. Have a wonderful trading day, everybody. And thank you, David, too.
Thank you, Robin.
All right,
talk
thanks
to you guys
a lot,
tomorrow.
Guys. I'll see you both tomorrow.
See you then.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I didn't notice what time it was. All I know is that I fell in love with you. And if all my dreams come true, I'll be spending time with you. Every day's a new day in love with you.
All right, that's going to do it for us. This Monday, we did have a tweet last night. Consider being short the euro below 136.20, and the post went on to say, "I'm serious, it really did." It said, "At 136.05, you can punch out and buy me lunch. I'm waiting." So 136.05, where would that be? That would be way up here. Yeah. So actually the swing low on this thing has been 135.09. So what's the math on that? I should be able to do it in my head, but 136.20 minus 135.09. So there was a total. Is that, that's not right. Is it? 136. Let me do it again. 136.20 minus the swing low at 135.09. Yeah, it's 111 pips. Ticks. That was the maximum potential so far in this trade, 111 pips. Now, the euro pays 12.50 a pip. So 111 times 12.50. So the maximum on that would be 1,387 per contract. So call it whatever. That's the maximum potential. Now, remember, my suggestion was if you took 15 pips out of it from 120, from 620 down to 615, you could punch out, take the day off, and still buy me lunch. That would be because it would exceed that equivalent of 2 points per day per contract. So let's see, 15 pips times 1250 equals, that was 187.50. Wow, so I was going to have an $87 lunch. Huh. I don't know if I need all that. I guess it depends on where we go. So that was the tweet. Okay, the ES tweet. We had an ES tweet, too, that thing didn't do so well. We'll look at it, too, just to be fair. So this was the Euro tweet. Consider being short below 136.20. And we dropped down to 135.09 so far. It's pretty bearish. And look at the cycle up here. I mean, it's been quote-unquote overbought for some time. Eventually, it's going to turn down. All right? But we caught the very first part of this down move here today, 111 pips. Now, we also had a tweet on the YM. Let's have a look at that. YMH3. Okay. All right, let's see what we got here. Okay, on the YM, I was consider being short below 13.905. So let's find that. Right in there. Okay, 13905 minus the swing low so far, 13806 equals 99. So there's been the market, not I, but the market made available 99 points. Not pips, but points. Now, the Dow E-mini pays $5 per point. So, the potential there would have been the maximum potential, $495 per contract. Okay? Now, I'm pointing these out just to say that on both of those, the opportunity to take 2 points out of that tweet was certainly there. Okay? So on the euro, that was a big one. 111 pips times 1250 a pip. That's the maximum potential. Not to say you're going to get every tick of that. I wouldn't even expect you to or think you would. What I like to do is I like to look at how much the market makes available. And then you can go, okay, well, because if you weren't in the trade and all you can do is speculate, all right, well, what would I have taken out of that? It made this much available. If I were in it, how would I have traded it? How would I have managed it? Because you've got to begin to learn. You've got to get a game plan in your head. You know, everything that you see Michael do each morning when he does the recap of the live trading room, okay, he's not making up those rules as he goes along. As he goes into each trade, he's got it's firmly laid out how he's going to deal with that. And so when you find setups that make a fair amount of points, pips, whatever you're dealing with, available, okay, now you begin to fine-tune to write your plan, okay? Plan your trade, trade your plan. If you're a partner and you don't have that PDF, let me know so I can send it to you. You really need to work that thing from print it out, put it in a binder, put it on your desk, and then spend the next couple weeks to couple months getting that plan complete, okay? It's really important. So, the Euro tweet, the market, not me, not Dwayne, the market made over $1,300 available per contract on the S&P, not the S&P, but on the Dow, the one we're looking at right now, the market made $495 per contract available. The NQ, that one, let's take a look and see what happened over there. NQ. Okay, this is the one where I had to send out the scratch on it. Let me go back and see what it says. Consider buying the NQH3 2750 limit. Okay, so that one, let me break it out into an hourly and show you what happened there. Okay, because when we put that thing on, consider buying NQH3 2750 limit. Okay, 2750 is right here. Buying 2750 on a limit, that trade got stopped out. Pure and simple, okay? That's why I like on the tweets, I like doing it on a stop better because, see, when you do it on a limit, okay, it's going to pull back. I have no idea how it's going to handle this area because by then I've left the screen. I've left the trading floor, the flight deck. I'm probably in bed, okay? So it comes back here. I have no way of gauging how the market's handling this area. Whereas if I use 2750 as my line in the sand, then, like, if I was watching this pull back, I could say, okay, all right, we just hit my 2750 level that I like. What's the high of that candle? 2753. Okay. You know what? If it takes out the high of this candle, I want to be long. Had I still been awake watching the market, that might have been something I would have considered doing. But the way I called the trade, the way I tweeted it, that possibility, that's why on most every tweet that I send out, you're going to see me do it on a stop. It's the rare occasion I do it on a limit, but and right here is exactly why. Okay, NQ stopped out. All right, let's see about the ES. What did we do on the ES? The ES, we had said consider buying 1505 on a limit. Now, let's see. Okay, and what we said on the 1500, we said if the 1503 doesn't fill, then you consider being long above 1508. This is going to be another case of the market not doing what we had anticipated it doing. Okay. Now, on this pullback to 1503, had I been in front of the market when it actually pulled back to 1503, it would have been very easy to say, okay, all right, on a break back above 1505, perhaps, I'd like to be long. Okay. I did throw a number out way up here, 1508, which was putting us above this swing high, but all the market did was just sell off. And so that's two trades back to back that got stopped out. So it's always important for me because I'm always glad to show you the trades that do well when we tweet them out. But if one doesn't work out, okay, last thing in the world I want to do is sweep it under the carpet. I'm always happy to talk about it because that's part of trade. That's the truth about trading, okay? It's very easy to cherry pick and highlight the ones that behave and do exactly what you expect them to do and anticipate them to do. You got to be able to deal with these right here and then be willing to step up to the plate and take the next trade. This doesn't mean you're flawed or wrong or bad or you need to go get another system or another trading room or another indicator. No, it just means that you saw this as a great area for the market to try to, you know, rally, and it did try. This wick right here is evidence that when it hit it, it rallied back up, but the pressure to the downside was just too great. It could not overcome it, and so that's why you always trade with a hard stop. Okay, you don't let that thing take you down here and go, well, it'll come back. Okay, well, when it hits this pivot low right here, it's definitely going to bounce from there. And now look, we're even lower. You know, the market can remain irrational longer than most of us can remain solvent. So it's really important that whether you're trading intraday in the live trading room with us, or you're trading on a bigger picture swing trade, always use a hard stop. Okay, using a hard stop is the cheapest insurance you'll ever buy. Okay, it ensures that you live to trade another day. Okay. Question: once a particular week has elapsed, do we still honor the weekly trading zones of the previous week? Thanks, Mike. I appreciate that. Mike says, I always take serious your word consider on each trade. And I'm glad you noticed that. I'm glad you brought it up, Mike, because I put that there for a reason. Okay? Consider. You know, take a look at it. See if it matches up to your expectations, to your risk profile. See if it jives with anything you've learned or anything you understand about the market. That's exactly why I put that in there. Back to your question, Jeanette. Once a particular week has elapsed, do we still honor the weekly trading zones from the previous week? Weekly trading zones do have what I call a carryover effect. In fact, Michael and I used to chart them an additional week out. And yes, you will see support and resistance around the previous zones. But it got to the point where our charts just started to look very crowded. So then we began to keep track of them on, you know, just on a piece of paper. And when price would approach them, we would bring it up. Now, this is back when the weekly trading zones had a range of a minimum of 100 points top to bottom. Of late, we've not had that luxury. The zones from top to bottom have been quite a bit narrower. This week, it's about 70 points, okay? And I was kind of stretching it to get to 70. So when you put this week's zones in along with last week's zones, boy, it doesn't leave you much room to maneuver. With that said, I think it's very intuitive of you to ask that question, and I would, yes, encourage you to perhaps keep them on a sheet of paper and to at least be aware of them, okay? Because if a certain number acted as good support last week, just because we, you know, have moved into a new calendar week doesn't take that away, all right? I mean, the market is constantly moving, okay? But, you know, if, yeah, so great question. And yes, there is a carryover effect. And yes, I encourage you to at least be aware of them, if for no other reason than on a little, you know, just a little scratch piece of paper. Okay, guys, if there's no other questions, we're going to wrap it up here. We've done a long show today anyway. 2 hours and 38 minutes. So, a reminder, if you want to take the free trial, okay, all you have to do is go to cfrn.net/apply. I've put the link in the chat room. It's very easy for you to click, go there. No credit card required. Just your name, your email address. And what we want you to do, okay, is we want you to download our platform. We want you to install our indicators. We want you to come into the live trading room. We want you to watch how we go about getting a minimum of 2 points a day and whatever else is that we end up doing. Okay? We want you, as you're watching, with the simulator, with the DOM, to put on and take off trade. You know, you spend maybe a day or two just getting familiar with everything because it can be a little overwhelming. You know, but by day three, you're ready to start, you know, putting on some trades in the simulator, not in a live account, but in the simulator, so that you can get a feel for it, so that by the time the fifth day rolls around, you can say, I use the platform, I use the tools, I use the indicator, I use the methodology, I see how I could make money with this, or I see that this probably isn't right for me, or it's not right for me at this point in my trading career. Maybe it's something I'll come back to and visit another time once I have more experience or greater understanding of the market, okay? Or by the fifth day, you might go, wow, I actually was able to do something that I've not been able to do in the past, and that was to consistently get 2 points a day, 3 days in a row. Now, I realize 3 days in a row is a sliver of time, but if you go back over the video recaps, with this methodology and this indicator set, okay, it's been pretty consistent. And that's really what you have to strive for. There's a million different ways, maybe 2 million, maybe a kajillion, maybe a kajillion ways to get 2 points a day out of the market. Okay? By no stretch of the imagination am I trying to convey that our way is the only way. There's a lot of ways. What you've got to do is figure out which way you're going to use, and the reason you're going to use that way is because you can do it consistently. Okay? Is it something you can do? Is it something you can use day after day after day after day. Can you use it in a climbing market and a declining market? Can you use it in a sideways market? Can you use it in a market that has high volatility? Can you use it in a market that has low volatility? Can you use it in a trending market? Can you use it in a directionless market? Okay? Because all of those things, all of those days I just mentioned, those are all days that you're going to encounter in trading. In fact, over a five-day week, you might encounter one of each of those. Okay? So whatever methodology that you choose, it needs to be one that you can trade consistently. Remember, there's a lot of different ways to get a couple points a day. What you have to do is find one that you can use to get a couple points a day on a consistent basis. That's why we want you to use the platform, use the indicators, and use the methodology before you spend a dime. We want you to develop confidence before you part with your hard-earned cash. Now, that's a little quirky. The bankers and the marketing gurus tell us that we've got it, you know, backwards, that we've put the cart before the horse or some other kind of thing, that's not the way to move product. Well, it's not about just moving product. For us, it's about building a community, okay? Community of believers who trade for a living, because we know that most of you have aspirations as to what you'd like to do with your money above and beyond, you know, Havanas and a Ferrari and other stuff, okay? Some of you have some. Many of you, you know, want to provide for your family. And we know that in America, we exchange, or around the world, people exchange time for money. It's called job, all right? And you'd like to have more time to spend with your family. Now, I can tell you right now that my job gives me less time to spend with my family, but, you know, it won't be forever. But it is for now. So it is what it is. So what is it that you want? You know, is it about having more time? Is it about having more money? Is it possible that you can have both? Okay. Well, we think we have a way that you can have both. Okay. The only way for you to find out is to come try. There's no shortage of people who are waiting in line to sell you a set of indicators and a methodology. No shortage. You probably got 50 emails already today, and it's not even noon in California. And you'll probably get another 50 before the sun goes down. How many of those people are going to let you use their platform, use their tools, use their methodology, and show you how to use it for a week? I don't know. We're a little bit of an anomaly. Are we the best? No. I'm sure there's guys out there much sharper. They can shoot much straighter. They ride taller in the saddle. They're probably even better looking. I don't know. That's a stretch, but maybe. It's possible. All we can say is that we want to be the most transparent. That's something that we can aspire to and probably accomplish. Or at least go down trying. Okay? What you see is what you get. And we invite you. Come take the free trial. We love to have you as a part of our community. But we only want you as a part of our community once you have assured yourself that what we have is what's right for you. Otherwise, nobody wins. All right? All right. That's it. Thanks so much for tuning in. Whoever you are, wherever you are, may God continue to richly bless you with His mercy and with His grace. And I'll see you at the bell.
Remember this. There is no greater return on investment than to see a human life changed and given hope. As always, pray hard and trade safe. Any financial information discussed on this show is simply the opinion of our host, Dwayne Reeves, his co-hosts, and guests. To learn more about trading e-mini futures or to take a one-week free trial in our live trading room, call 1-866-928-3310. 866-928-3310. Information discussed on this radio program should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Always do your own due diligence and consult with a licensed securities broker or financial planner before making any investment decision.